tonight on Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. It's an encore presentation featuring the best of Art Bell and his guests, Mel Waters, and the story of Mel's Hole, the bottomless pit in Washington State. Art will be back live tomorrow night with his guest, best-selling author Dean Koontz. And now, this hour from February of 1997, enjoy the best of Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell.
Art Bell is taking calls on the Wildcard Line at 702-727-1295. That's 702-727-1295. First-time callers can reach Art Bell at 702-727-1222. 702-727-1222. Now, here again, Art Bell.
Well, all right. I have got Mel on the line. No thanks to all the Mel imitators on the special Mel line. I finally picked up the phone during the newscast and called Mel's number, and he was just coming in. So I've got Mel on the line. Mel is the guy with the never-ending hole, and we're going to ask him about it here in a moment. I have read that fax now twice on the air, and I've got a lot of follow-up faxes. Here's one entitled, Yet Another Mystery Hole in Eastern Washington. Art, you'll love this. It was sent to me a couple of days ago by email. And it's all about another one on the Indian Reservation in Colville, where there is another mystery hole. Anyway, we'll get to that. Well, all right. Now to Eastern Washington. I guess this is Eastern Washington. Mel, are you there?
Yes, I am.
First of all, Mel, thank you for answering. What are you doing up at this time of the morning?
Well, after I sent the fax, I'm living in town here now because we had a couple of our buildings out there cave in after the big snows that we had out here last month.
Oh, yes.
And so thereby goes some of the construction debris into the hole. So,
all right. When did you discover this hole?
Well, the hole has always been there. We've been out there for a couple of years now, and you know, the hole has been there since we've been there. It's been there since the previous owner was there, and the previous owner there was quite elderly, and I'd say he was there for a good 30, 40 years before we moved in.
Wow.
And then
and so there's been a thing of throwing stuff down this hole for a long time.
Oh, yeah, it's been going on, you know, for as long as the hole has been there, I assume.
When nobody knows that, I guess. All right, how do you pronounce the name of your town, Manistash?
Manistash.
Manistash,
right.
That's right. Thank you.
Actually, I'm in, right now I'm in a little town called Ellensburg.
Oh, I know Ellensburg. All right.
You must know about a rodeo here then.
Oh, sure.
Okay. Well, so, yeah, we've been there for several years. And, you know, we take all of our trash, rubbish, anything we have that we have to get rid of, we take it, throw it in the hole. Everyone's throwing their stuff in the hole. The people from around there throw all the stuff in the hole. I mean, it's just been going on for a long time. Well, you know, I got this thinking one day, how come this hole is not filling up? It must be an awfully deep hole.
That's a good thing to consider, sure, as you throw stuff in it for decades, literally.
And so, you know, I used to be a, I would say pretty close to a professional shark fisherman. So I had a couple of huge fishing reels, went out there and started letting the line down. I figure after one...
Did you weight the line?
Oh, yeah. There's in fact, the original line is still down there. I have just been adding to the line and keeping track of how much line I have used. So I've not reeled it in.
How much weight is on it?
There's a one-pound weight at the bottom of it.
One-pound weight, all
right. One-pound weight. It's a triangular one-pound weight.
Okay.
And so that's at the bottom of it. At first...
So in other words, it would go down kind of like a plumb bob.
Exactly, exactly. In fact, I have it rigged across the center of it there, and it goes, you know, goes straight down from the center there. And occasionally I try to move the line there, but when you're moving that much line, you really can't do a whole lot with it. But it seems to, you know, there seems to be... It's not resting against anything at this point here, and it continues to go down freely. And so when I was out there earlier, I'd let out a little bit more line. And
so you actually went out there tonight after I read this?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, well, man.
Well, you know, it's not too bad out here right now. It's only about 25 degrees, so it's not too cold.
Have you ever heard anything coming from any sounds or anything?
Well, you know, I mean, the normal thing to do is kind of like yell into it there, to, you know, to see an echo. And I've never heard an echo come out of that thing.
No echo.
At all. You know, that's one of the first things I noticed about it. As usual, I brought the dogs with me. They wouldn't go anywhere near the damn thing, and I went back to the Suburban and hung out over there. So it was kind of I can't, if I try to bring them there on a leash, they'll just dig their feet in. They do not want to go anywhere near the hole. And so that's, I don't know. It's just,
well, you've got miles and miles of
Yeah, I'm measuring it by feet. You know, I convert feet to yards, so I don't know
sure.
how many miles that is. I assume it's a fair number of miles, though.
Well, 5,280 feet is a mile, so you really think you've got 80,000?
Yes, yeah, I get the line in 5,000-yard spools, and so I've gone through that many.
Well, you have got a hole, then, that goes, well, you know, you can't say to the center of the earth, but you've got a hole that goes miles and miles and miles into the earth. I would think a university would be out there, boom, just like that.
Well, my wife does work for a local university here, and, you know, we've been talking to them about it, and one of the things is they find it quite incredible that I've let that much line into the ground, but that's what I've been doing.
Have you ever thought of winding it all back up again?
Well, when I let out the first 1,500 yards of line, I reeled all of that back in.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know if I had hit water down there, because I thought that's a lot of feet.
You bet.
You know, that's 4,500 feet of line. Did I hit water? So I sent down a roll of Lifesavers.
Lifesavers?
Yeah. So when it hits the water, the Lifesavers will dissolve.
That's true. Oh, I see. So very smart. So
yeah, it's an old shark fisherman's trick there. We used to send our bait out on a balloon attached to a roll of Lifesavers, and the bait would go out into the ocean on the tide.
Yeah.
And then eventually the Lifesavers would melt, and the bait would fall to the bottom. So you know, you couldn't cast a big old mackerel out there that far.
Yeah,
so
that's amazing. So what do you got any guesses?
I have no idea. I thought it could have been a mine shaft, but the thing about it is the surface part of it's been very well cared for. I mean, someone built a very lovely wall around it. And
all right, tell me about the nature of the side of the walls. In other words, you must be able to look down far enough at least to examine the side of the walls.
Sure. It's stone for about 15 feet down.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's soil, dirt, and then, you know, further down, rock. You know, so, but I can only see to the extent of, really powerful flashlight. I brought halogen lights out there to try to get a better look down there, but the visibility really isn't there. You cannot see much after a while. But it's a retaining wall. I'd say it's about a 3.5 foot retaining wall, and it goes down about 15 feet, and then it's...
Well, I'll tell you this much. No matter how powerful a light, and I was even thinking about a laser, when you're talking about 80,000 feet, forget it. No.
Well, they should have some technology that can give me an idea of how deep this thing is. I mean, obviously, the old fishing line method is only going to go so far.
What we need here is a volunteer. Really, I'm serious. Somebody who would be willing to be lowered into this hole.
Well, I don't. You know, to be honest with you, I don't even know if there's any air down that far. I mean,
I wouldn't know about that either.
Or,
yeah,
you know, what
true.
Kind of pressures we're dealing with. These are things that, you know, are totally beyond my grasp in terms of, you know, knowledge about these things. But
do you own this property?
It's our property, yeah.
Uh-huh. How long have you been working on this?
Well, we've been out there for a couple of years, I said about 4 years now. But this project here with letting down the line, that's only been since last summer here. And it was just,
last
you know,
summer.
I said, well, how come this thing isn't filling up?
Well, sure.
And, you know, I made, you know, I talked to the neighbors around there, you know, which are, you know, on you know, when you're out there in the country, your neighbors are pretty far away, but they all know the hole out there.
They all know about it. So it's
well, because they all bring their trash out there.
So the local legend of the hole.
Yeah. This could be an apocryphal story, but one guy claims that he threw his departed canine down into the hole.
Oh, really?
And the story is the guy that did it swears the dog actually came back to him. And he was a
really?
Hunter. He was a hunter. The story is that he was a hunter, and he was out there hunting, and he saw the same dog. He had the same collar. He had the same little, what is that, little metal thing on his collar there. And he said it was the same dog. And he says he knew he threw the dog into the hole. But
well,
that's not, you know, that's not my dog. That's not my,
it's not your story, but it's a story of a resurrected dog.
Yeah. This is, you know, as you can well imagine, this is all Native American land around here. And
yeah,
so one
yeah,
of the lines
yeah.
of inquiries I'd like to make is, you know, is there anything about this hole in regards to the Native Americans? You know, that's something I haven't really pursued right now. But
if you had a fatal disease, Mel,
yeah,
would you jump in the hole?
I would.
You would?
Just
based
it's actually,
on the dog
it's actually,
story?
It is in my will.
What?
That I meet my demise.
That you would be thrown in the hole?
Disposed of into the well.
I'm not sure the health department would allow that.
Well, you know, one of the things that we, you know, I thought about later on is, what if this is like contaminating our water, you know? And, you know, we've had, you know, I'm sure you do this out there in Pahrump, too.
Well,
you
no
have your water checked all the time.
Well, yeah, no personal offense to you, Mel, but if there was a possible contamination problem, I'm sure you're a clean guy.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you deteriorated, you would possibly produce E. coli or something horrible in the local water supply.
Well, again, so far it hasn't.
If
you
weren't
resurrected. I mean, the water around that area is absolutely pure water. It is, you know.
And so nothing thrown down, all the old junk and trash,
no.
And nothing has polluted the water.
No, I mean, you know, I can't speak for everything that's been thrown down there, but so you know, none of that has been showing up in the water that people draw from their wells. I mean, you know, the water's as clean as it's ever been out there. I think we get water that comes off the Cascades or something.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, yeah.
It's just really great. It's really wonderful water.
Mel, you wouldn't be pulling my leg.
No, I'm not. And one of the reasons that I went out to the property tonight, other than it just, you know, it's something that weighs heavily on my mind. I was afraid that after I sent the facts out, that there'd be people around there because it's.
Well, there may be, but we have not identified specifically where it is.
Well, there aren't, as far as I could tell, too many big holes like that around. And so at least the people in my neck of the woods are familiar with it. And I kind of almost expected to see a small party of people.
Well, there may be. Now, I mean, you know, come daylight, there may be. But remember, folks, this is private property. This is Mel's home.
It is posted, too.
Oh, it is. All right. Well, there you are.
So
without knowing exactly where it is, I wouldn't look for that to occur, but there is going to be substantial curiosity about it now, Mel.
Well, you know, I think I've, you know, let you know as much as I know about it, I certainly want to find out more. I was mostly curious about the depth of it. I mean, how deep is the deepest hole anyone has ever found?
Well, I've never heard of anything deeper than this.
You know, I thought maybe this would be like Guinness World Book of Records type hole here. As far as things I thought it would be like, could have been like an old mine.
Well, now here's a couple things to think about. I've heard as you go down into the earth, Mel, that it gets hotter.
Ooh.
Right? So
yes.
You would think that your fishing line with a weight on it at some point would melt or, you know, something, but there's still weight on it, huh?
Yeah.
The
line is not moving freely. I mean, you know, it still falls under its own weight.
Oh, that's amazing. Let's let some of the audience ask you questions.
Okay, I think I can do that.
All right, because I just might be missing something. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel, who's got the hole in Washington.
Hello.
Hello. Do you have any questions for Mel? Hello? Okay, well, I guess that guy gave up. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hello. Oh, you got a guess now?
I did. Well, I mean, sort of.
I was calling about something else.
All right. Well, thank you. First time caller line, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Mel?
Yes, Mel.
Oh, Mel. I wanted to talk to Art. I'm on the wrong line.
Yeah, you are.
I'm sorry. That's the 222 line?
1222 is first time caller line.
That's what I thought I was calling.
Well, that's what you got. But I mean, we're talking with Mel right now. I'm trying to. He's a guy with the hole in Eastern Washington.
Okay. I just have something for Art.
All right.
Mel.
Well, call me back when we're into open lines. Wildcard line. You're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hi, Art. This is Dave in Milwaukee.
Hi, Dave.
Hey, I was listening to this. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I just wanted to let you know. I looked up an encyclopedia, and the Marianas Trench, which is the deepest hole we know about.
That's in the ocean, right?
Right. It's 36,000 feet deep.
So this is, certainly over double that already.
Right. And it also says, under mining, that with current technology, we can only go down about 1,600 feet.
Wow.
That's great. That is great.
So you've got something here that already qualifies for Guinness.
That is wonderful.
Yep.
I like that. That's great. You said 1,600 feet?
That's what they said, yeah. 1,640 feet, it says, with current technology is about as deep.
Wow.
All right. Thank you very much for that information. So already we now learn that you may have a Guinness qualifying hole there, no question about it.
Jeez.
But I want to know, inquiring minds want to know, I would think even if we just had somebody lowered past the 1,600-foot mark to see what's down there.
That would be cool, but it wouldn't be me.
You wouldn't do it?
I wouldn't go down in the hole.
At least not while you're still alive.
Then I will, you know. But I mean, you know, for the time being, no.
I understand. All right, east of the Rockies, you're on the air with
what
Mel.
What if the rope broke?
Yeah.
Well, that's true.
Mel?
Yeah, hi.
Where are you calling from, sir?
I'm in Austin, Texas.
Austin, Texas, all right.
Yeah, you mentioned earlier that you would like somebody to be lowered down into the hole.
That's right.
I would be willing to do that.
See, there you go, sir, a volunteer.
We've got a volunteer.
Yeah, I mean, obviously under certain conditions.
Like what?
Just a cage, for one.
A cage?
Yeah, just in the event that there's some kind of weird subterranean thing eating all of this garbage down there. Obviously, I would want to be in some kind of a cage.
Well, what makes you think, though, that anything that could gobble up, say, a refrigerator...
Wouldn't get the cage? Well, I would have, a very powerful light, and I'd be able to see it at some point before it's too late.
So we'd have radio contact with you, and we could hear you scream, at least.
Yeah.
Not too much.
Or
like
an instant up button.
An up button?
An instant up button. On back up. You know, at like a high speed.
And you could take a camera with you?
Yeah.
With a light and show us everything as it is.
Yeah. I've got a pretty adventurous nature to me anyway. Plus I have a very appealing draw to the supernatural for some reason anyway, just naturally in my personality.
Well, nobody's saying there's anything supernatural about this, but...
Well, the dog story would indicate something supernatural.
Well, that's true.
Everyone's dogs are scared of the hole.
Yeah.
It's not just my dogs.
No, that's a very good point. In other words, other dogs won't go anywhere near the hole, huh?
Yeah, my dogs will follow me everywhere. I mean, you know, no matter where I go, they're, you know...
Except
to the well.
Uh-huh.
Now, you call
it... Is this possibly at a grid point on the planet?
I wouldn't know about grid points, other than I know they exist.
Art, do you know anything about the grid points?
Yes, thank you, sir, from Austin. I've heard about grid points, but I would have no way of knowing where they are and whether this is one of them. I wouldn't know. Now, this is just a hole. And he's right, there is something a little paranormal about it when you consider the dog story. I tell you, Mel, hold on, all right?
Mm-hmm.
Stand by. We'll be right back to you.
I can hear your concerns about my happiness. But all the thoughts you're giving me is conscious again.
Well, here's somebody from Las Vegas. Mike suggests that we throw a cat down the hole. Listen to the cat scream as it goes down. It's a horrible idea. I don't know about people who do that, throw down a cat. Oh, man. And you hear the echo sort of going down. I'm not for that at all. All right, Mel, here come some more people. First time caller line, you're on the air with Mel with the hole.
Art, why don't you have somebody, I know you're connected with somebody that's got radar available. Radar would be the way to go to find out the depth.
Well, would radar go down a hole
absolutely.
Without hitting the sides?
You don't need a fancy radar to do it.
You mean like a... What about sonar? No, I guess
no,
that's...
No, sonar you couldn't use because you don't have anything for the medium to go through, like underwater for sonar.
Yeah.
But radar would definitely work.
In other words...
I was just curious if you'd call a government agency to come out.
But wouldn't radar return a hit from the sides of the hole and melt around down there?
No. Purely directional radar. What do you use when you're driving down the highway?
Well... You use radar, but
exactly.
That's out in the open. That's not in. I don't know enough about radar to know if that would work, but it's a good idea.
Well, I've used it for years, but that's
right.
A way to try it.
All right, that's. I want. How about a cop's radar?
I'm not sure if they'll return an echo off of that. It's possible.
All right. Well,
it would tell you how fast the hole was going, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Tell you how fast. Cute, Mel. Wildcard line. You're on the air with Mel. Hello.
This is pretty funny. Good evening, Mel.
Hi.
My name is Barry. I'm just hop, skipping, and jumping away from you down here in Yakima.
All right.
And I'm awful surprised I haven't heard of this before now.
Well, now, Mel hasn't made this public as far as I know. Have you, Mel?
No, it's just on my land.
Oh, I see.
So my neighbors know about it.
But well, I mean, wait. This is the first public announcement of the whole?
As far as I know, there's no newspaper accounts of it, you know, not in the Daily Record or in the Herald.
Well, there will be
the
now.
Herald.
There will be now.
Well, as usual, you've heard it here first, folks, on
That's
our bill.
Right.
Before I get serious, I just wanted to kind of lighten things up here and ask if you'd considered making a contract with the Refuse Collection Department from Yakima County. You could probably make a killing on that.
You know, I read an article in the paper how they wanted to close down our local dump out here, and I almost seriously suggested.
Listen, here's another possibility for you. Do you know that I live near an area where there's supposed to be a high-level nuclear dump? Now, if this is really, in effect, a bottomless pit,
whoa,
you may have something that the U.S. government wants.
So I could, like, rent this thing out.
You're damn right.
And move away as
they
quick
bring...
as possible.
Well, yeah.
Anyways, I wanted to mention here, we've got many, many mediums of technology, and the gentleman who suggested radar, I think, was onto something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, say, for instance, that Guinness was a, you know, came out and was going to, you know, they're pretty thorough with their investigation before they're going to print you.
Yeah, that's
but
true.
Anyways, you know, maybe the way to go is to have someone lower in a sensors package, you know, which is something that measures for noxious gases, temperature, and I'm sure they could focus a radar, you know, probably pencil thin,
mm-hmm.
you know, and just hook it up to an endless supply of a cable and lower it down. I think that'd be awful interesting.
Look, I'd be interested, even if we don't get a hold of the guy from Austin, to lower a camera and a light down.
You know, when I was out there this evening, it's kind of a sort of a full moon out there. And one of the things that occurred to me is maybe this has some sort of astronomical type thing.
What do you mean, though?
Well, you know, it's like, you know, how, you know, the various pyramids and things in Egypt, you know, are supposed to be lined up on various star systems or whatever.
Well, was it a thing like where the moonlight was shining into the hole?
Well, no, but I just happened to notice, you know, the full moon, and all
yeah,
of a sudden
moon,
it just sort of put two and two together there, you know.
You've never felt drawn to the hole personally, have you? I mean, in terms of, you know.
You mean in terms of some sort of spiritual involvement or?
No, suicide,
no.
Suicide.
No. I keep the lid on it there because it's an attractive nuisance. You don't want local kids there climbing on the wall and falling in.
There's actually no way of knowing whether people have gone in. Because they'd be gone.
Not in my
down with a refrigerator.
You know. Again, if I can find out something from the local Native Americans on, you know, maybe with some sort of burial thing or, you know, I mean,
and you can drop a big rock and you can hear it going down, probably bouncing off the walls or something, but you never hear a splash.
You never hear a splash. I've even taken like old television tubes, you know, the picture tubes, and
picture tubes down
yeah,
there.
Yeah, I've dropped. I hate to say this here, but I've dropped more than one of them down there, and I've never heard it implode or anything. Nothing.
EPA, you probably shouldn't say that on the air.
Well,
they'll come and get you for that. I mean, TV tubes.
Well, it is my.
It's your own property, I know, but
yes.
These days, Mel, doesn't make any difference. I mean, tomorrow morning you're liable to wake up and there'll be tanks and Boutros Ghali will
be
there.
That's true.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel.
Hi. WKXY, Sarasota.
Sarasota, Florida, yes.
Let me say, let's throw Mike from Las Vegas down the hole.
Really?
Yeah. Okay, you know, he's the cat. Okay. I do have a question for Mel. You're a fisherman, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you ever felt a tug on the line? And if you did, what would you do?
I don't have a hook on it. There's just a large, there's a 1 pound weight.
Yeah, but she's saying if something obviously was pulling on the line.
What would I do?
Yeah.
I'd
run.
Yeah.
I'd seal that damn thing up and I'd never get near it again.
Yeah, I'd put the lid down on it at that point there and say, that's it, the dump is closed.
And at any point, did you ever pull up the weight? And look at it.
Yeah, I asked that too.
The first series of letting down line when I got about 4,500 feet down there, I had a roll of lifesavers down on the bottom to determine if there was any water down there. And of course, if there was water, the lifesavers would melt. I didn't do that. But since that time, I've let the line continuously go down. I've just spliced on to the end of the line and continued.
Yeah, just trying to find out where the bottom is.
Yeah, that was my main question. It's like, how deep is this thing? Where does it go? You know, well, it goes into the earth, but you know, how far does it go before it'll stop?
Okay.
You know.
Thanks.
You know.
All right, thank you, ma'am. I think that a light and a video camera. I mean, Mel, you could have a special as you got down past, what did they say was the deepest hole, 1,600
feet? 1,600 feet.
As you got down past 1,600 feet, you'd have a network special on your hands, Mel.
That would be good. I'm thinking about putting up a web page on it there if I can get one of those.
What's his name? Rivera would come.
and they'd lower him into the hole.
Only if we were all lucky. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Yeah, this is Terry from Bremerton.
Hello, Terry. Oh, you're up in Washington again, yeah.
You're right. Well, I was wondering about how much does 15 miles of fishing line weigh?
I have no idea. I'm just letting that sucker go down. I have not
well,
reeled
what if
it
you've
in.
Already hit the bottom and you got a pound of fishing line on it? You're
that's
just
right.
Letting it down.
Yeah,
I
should weigh one of those spools because I'm getting them in 5,000-yard spools.
Yeah.
And so I should weigh a spool and sort of deduct the cost of the spool itself and see what that would add up to in terms of how much that weighs.
So in other words, it could have hit bottom some time ago and simply the pure weight of the line.
Right.
It doesn't feel like it is reach bottom there. There's no slack in the line.
But even so, well, there might not be with that much weight. But, you know, even if that's true, caller, think
yes.
about it. He's still got the deepest hole ever heard of in the world.
Yeah, he does. But the weight of the line would keep pulling the line down.
Yeah, 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 but there would be so much line down there by then. But
what pound test line is it?
I'm using 20 pound. I couldn't afford to
go
much higher.
Do you think you
have
20 pounds of line on it already?
Well, pardon me?
Do you think you have 20 pounds of line in the
hole
already?
I'm sure there's more line than that.
It would break by then.
You know, we're talking how many?
There must be a lot of tension.
I've got 20 spools of line.
A lot of tension on that.
Yeah.
20 spools of line on there.
Wow.
And it's still hanging on there. You know, that weight continues to go down. I don't know if there's a way of weighing that thing, you know, as it is.
Yeah, I was just interested in how much the line would weigh itself.
I could probably do that. You know, get one of those hanging scales.
Sure.
And the spring operating stuff, and just sort of knot it off up there.
Yeah, why not? It's worth a try. And the other thing that's worth a try, I suppose, although you'd be cranking for a long time, would be to crank it back up again.
Well, no, I could just weigh like one spool of line and multiply it. I think I'm up to about like 18 spools of line right now. So, you know, it wouldn't be too hard to get a weight on it.
All right. You'll report back to us on that?
Yeah, I could. Sure, definitely.
All right.
Yes, definitely.
All right. First time caller line, you're on the air with Mel. Hello?
Yes.
Hi, where are you?
I'm Bellingham, Washington.
Yes. Oh, Washington again. Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
I was wondering, what was the... Mel said that he had a triangular one-pound weight on the end of the line.
You're right.
Yeah, I was wondering what elements was that weight, or is that weight composed of?
It's a standard lead fishing weight.
Mm-hmm. You know, you were talking earlier, Al was talking earlier about the heat when you get...
I was speculating. You know, I saw the movie with Pat Boone about the journey to the center of the earth. It's supposed to get hot when you go down, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, what about the magnetism? You know, that's a factor you consider also.
The magnetism?
Yes.
You're off into a territory that I can't answer. Mel, are you gonna contact your wife? Works for a university,
yeah,
huh?
A local university.
Have they? I mean, did she tell them about this? And if so, what did they say?
Well, the people she talked to, because I nag her about it occasionally, say, they're telling her, you don't have a whole day that deep, you know.
So, in other words, they don't believe her?
No. No. What I'm trying to do is, you know, kind of entice them out there and just bring something out there to measure how deep it is.
Mel, would you be willing to talk to, like, newspaper people or television people? They're crazy. They'd send someone down there.
Well... I know I'm talking to a lot of people on the phone right now and on the radio, but I am not sure if I'd want to have a TV crew and a, you know.
So you're not sure you want that kind of publicity?
No, you know, I mean, you know, I'd be happy to, you know, like I say, you know, I could put together a website on it and you know, keep people, you know, informed about what's going on, because, you know, I'm sort of making this my
people would accuse you of going to the well one time too many.
That's probably true.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hello there. That is absolutely amazing. All right. This is Ken from Scottsdale.
Yes, sir.
And one thing I wanted to mention about that, when you mentioned about a car that had apparently fallen from the sky.
The Chevrolet, yeah.
Right. I recall reading about many, many incidents in England and throughout Europe of raining nuts of different kinds. I mean, Brazil nuts and hazelnuts.
Sometimes it rains nuts on my program. Listen, we're not talking about things falling from the sky right now. We're talking about a hole.
Right, I know. Well, it was open lines a minute ago. Now you switched it.
Well, I've switched it because I have Mel.
Oh, well, anyway, as far as the hole goes, isn't it possible there could be like an aquifer or something in the...
Mel has not found any water. Any water at all. He lowered lifesavers in, and the lifesavers came back, and that was how far, Mel?
4,500 feet.
4,500 feet, and the lifesavers came back intact, right?
Oh, yeah. They were absolutely dry. They weren't dissolved. They were just perfect.
That's pretty definitive. First time caller line, you're on the air with Mel. Hi.
Mel?
Hi.
Hi, this is Conrad in Grass Valley, and I've got some thoughts about this whole well problem.
Sure.
First of all, if he's putting line down the well...
Wait a minute, sir. We've got to stop this because people are going to call it a well. There has never been any water found in this hole.
Okay, a hole.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. If he started out with a one-pound weight and he starts adding fish line to it...
Right.
...then the amount of weight down the hole increases. All right, now, if he knows the weight of the line on a per-foot basis, as he puts more weight down the hole... If he could measure the total strain on the top of load on the top of the line, he would know if any of that line was draped on anything. See, the thing is, once he gets a fair amount of line
that's a good point.
The 1 pound weight on the end is insignificant. And he wouldn't even. It could be hung up on something or laying on the bottom or something, and he would never know it.
Yeah, but he put Lifesavers down 4,500 feet. So even if what you're saying is true, this is still, by a long shot, the deepest hole ever.
That assumes it's even that deep. The one thought that you had that I thought was very valid was the temperature as you go farther down into the ground.
Well, that's what they... I think that's right, isn't it?
Oh, yes, of course. By the time it's down... 4,000 feet in the ground, where the temperature would probably be well over 100 degrees Fahrenheit.
If the 100, the monofilament and the lead would certainly survive 100 degrees just fine. You're probably right. That is interesting. Mel, I say that we got to put a person down there, a volunteer.
Not a cat.
No, not a cat. No cats. But a person, maybe like a media person, one of these anchors from maybe one of the Seattle Como stations or something, you know, lower them down.
Oh, boy. again, I'm intrigued. Again, I've been running line down there for quite a while, and I don't think I've hit bottom. The weight seems to be hanging plumb over there, and... like I say, we've been throwing things down there for a long, 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 long time, and you know, this hole has not filled up. I don't know. Maybe it's getting incinerated down there. I don't know.
All right, and you would swear on all that is sacred to you that what you have told us is the absolute, unadulterated truth.
This is my hole, and this is the truth about it.
God, it's an amazing story, Mel. Who else besides your wife, the people you've tried to talk to at the university, and yourself, I guess your neighbors know about the hole?
Oh, yeah. There's probably good... Oh, well, you know, in terms, you know, not families, but individuals, probably good 20 people that use the hole regularly.
To throw junk into.
Yeah. It's always been done.
Well, I remember when I was a kid, I used to like to throw stuff... off bridges and stuff like that, and into holes just to hear it hit bottom.
Never heard anything hit. I mean, if you hit the side, of course, but if you just drop it straight down.
Straight down, yeah, 9.5 feet.
Go straight.
9.5 feet is certainly large enough so that if you got in the center and dropped it straight down, it would go straight down, right?
Yeah, you can just, you know, lean right over there and get it going straight down. You know, and as far as anything I can see, visually, you know, with halogens and flashlights,
the light just what fades away into blackness.
Yeah. You've got nothing after a while. You know, can see as far as the beam will go, and that's it. You know?
Does anybody have any theories about? You said a dog was thrown into the hole, dead, and then came back alive again, right?
The story is the guy was out hunting and he saw his dog, and he knew it was his dog because it was the same dog. It had the same collar, it had the same tag on it, and the whole thing.
Oh man, does anybody have any theories about what properties would be in the hole to resurrect a canine?
Gosh, I'd like to think that this is something like really benign. Cows have gone down there. I mean, I haven't heard any cows coming back, or at least that you would know. But I don't.
Well, it's not the creator. Well, look,
We're out of time. Mel, you get the honors from near the hole in Washington State. Tell them.
From the hole. It is good night to everyone from coast to coast.
And beyond. Thank you, Mel.
Stay tuned for more of the Best of Art Bell with Mel Waters, coming up after these messages.
Well, we talked about it Friday night, Saturday morning, last hour. Now, a lot of you might not have heard that last hour, so I've got Mel, and there's an update. It may be the deepest hole anywhere in the ground. It may go on forever, for all we know. I'll catch you up here in a moment. I received the following facts last week. Dear Art, I'm writing to you to see if I can get some help from you or your vast listening audience. I live in rural eastern Washington near the Menastash Ridge. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly now. On our property, there is a hole. Like the previous owners and the owners before them, we've been throwing our trash into the hole. Apparently, the hole has been there as long as anyone can remember. At first, I thought it was an ancient well. Anyway, the hole is 9 feet, 9 inches in diameter. There is a stone retaining wall around it, and we put a steel door on top to keep anyone from falling into it. As I said earlier, people have been throwing their trash into the well, that's in quotes here, for decades. Furniture, household trash, dead cows, building debris, you name it. The thing is, I noticed the hole never filled up. So I got curious, actually obsessed, began trying to measure the depth of the hole. I emptied 3 fishing reels of about 1,500 yards of monofilament trying to determine the depth. Soon I was buying fishing line in bulk. So far, I've sunk about 80,000 feet of line into the hole without reaching bottom. My wife works at a local university with a geology department. We hope to get some professional scholarly help in determining the depth of the hole, as far as I can tell. There's nothing else particularly strange about it, except for 2 other things. Dogs refuse to get within 100 feet of the hole. Birds won't sit on the retaining wall or metal door. Another strange thing is there's no echo when you yell into the hole. Indeed, I've never heard anything hit bottom when tossed in. We once tossed in an old refrigerator, and we never heard it hit bottom, no crash, splash, or crunch. I hope your listeners can help with possible explanations. I'm wondering if this, based on my measurements thus far, might be the deepest hole on Earth. Signed, Mel Waters. Well, you know me. I get a fax like this, and I jump right on it. So I called Mel in the middle of the night. We put him on the air. Last hour of the show, last week, and we got the story of Mel's Hole. But now, Mel's Hole Part 2. I get the following facts earlier today. Art, you're receiving this fax simultaneously with a fax I attempted to send you earlier today. Much has developed since the first fax. I'll try to explain as rationally as possible what has transpired since my earlier fax. Around 1 p.m., I drove to Yakima to shop at the Costco there. On my way back, I decided to stop at the property. When I got there, my access road was blocked by military personnel that were armed. I noticed that several pieces of yellow gear had entered and exited my property based on the direction of their tread. I asked one of the guards, "What's going on?" He said there was a plane crash on the property. I said, "Well, that's strange." I told him there's no smoke. I don't see any in the distance. He asked who I was, and I let him know I own the property. I then asked to talk to the officer in charge. A non-uniformed man came up to my Suburban and let me know that I won't have access to my property until the crash has been completely investigated. I mentioned the yellow gear and the lack of smoke and that they were on my property. I was told by this man that it's not necessarily my property, and that it would be very easy to find a drug lab on my property. Well, I got the drift. I asked if I could leave. He said, "Sure, don't come back until we contact you." I asked if he wanted a way to contact me. He said, They know how to contact me. I said, I suppose you don't want me to talk to anybody about this. He said, nobody would believe it anyway. That's about it for now. Oh, I talked to one of my neighbors earlier today, and he told me something very interesting. He said that some time ago, he was driving up to the hole at night and thought he saw the most bizarre thing. He said he saw a beam of solid black coming out of the then uncovered hole. I said, what do you mean? He said he saw something blacker than black coming out of the hole, like a searchlight reaching into the sky as far as he could see. So there you have it. There actually is more. Here is from the state of Washington. Here's Mel. Mel.
Hello, Art Bell and listeners.
Hi. When I got this second fax from you, I called you up, and you were totally, totally freaked out.
Oh my God, I was. I'll tell you, I was. I feel a lot better now. Let me tell you. But
yeah, you were just a pile of nerves when I talked to you. Now, what? Explain again. You went up to your property. You were going to examine the hole because we were talking about it. I'm sure you had interest. So, and they stopped you there, huh?
Yeah. Well, after the show on Friday night, I went out there and. In the evening, and noticed there were some helicopter activity around the property. There was further helicopter activity the next day, and so I figured that clearly somebody out there listens to your program.
Oh, yes.
And I think...
John, I'm really sorry I brought this on for you. I didn't... It certainly wasn't intentional.
Well, when we talked yesterday, you felt that probably the best thing to do is to be public in this matter. And
that's
I,
right. Your best protection is to be public, Mel.
Well, anyway, so there was a lot of activity around there. And, you know, I've had some thoughts about this. And if they knew where the hole was, I would imagine that they could take some readings of the depth of the hole from, like, satellites?
I don't know about that. I'm sure they have a way to measure it from ground. I'm not sure about satellites.
Well, we did have a lot of hovering up there in the air, I'll tell you that. So we did have that situation.
And they stopped you, right? In other words, there was a barrier there?
Well, there was on... I'll tell you, I'm getting a little confused about days. I guess it's now Tuesday morning.
Yeah, that's right.
But since what they had originally there was a barrier, not a barrier, but just armed soldiers, basically.
Armed soldiers.
Armed soldiers. Since then, they have erected some further down the road. I mean, you can't even... I mean, basically, there's the road, there's the access road, and then finally kind of meander into the property.
Okay.
They now have jersey barriers at the road.
What are those?
Jersey barriers. Those are they're kind of like big chunks of concrete.
Like the bomb barriers they have at the White House.
More or less. So you could squeeze maybe one vehicle through there, but it's definitely being controlled over there.
Now this is your property, right? You've got the deed to this property.
This is mine in the banks.
Well, you're in the bank. You know, we're all in the same situation. So they won't let you on your own property, and they're claiming there was a plane that crashed.
Yeah, that was the thing. And I said, well, where's the smoke? I've seen plane crashes before. There's got to be smoke. And again, I had talked. I asked to talk to the officer in charge there, and I figured, one of these military types would come up, and I don't know, maybe he was just dressed in civilian clothes because of, the nature of what happened there. But he told me that I won't be able to go out there until the accident's been investigated. And I was insistent about my property rights, and he seemed to indicate that this might not necessarily be my property in regards to the drug lab. So, but the problem is, I do have a sort of a lab on the property. But
no, wait a minute. Ooh,
yep.
You have a sort of lab. What kind of lab?
Well, I work working in the alternative health field here and on the property, and that's one of the reasons, and this can all come out now, I imported some
plant life from northern Nevada. They were Native American plants that the Indians used there for treatment of various illnesses, mostly cold and flu.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we, because of the nature of the climate, and it's very similar to northern Nevada, we thought we would cultivate these plants and then use it as a cure. It's a very effective cure.
It's not a narcotic, is it?
No, it's not narcotic. It's
well,
not
then what the hell are they talking about drug lab?
Well, there is a lab there, though. I mean, and...
But there's no... You're not cranking out crank or methamphetamine or anything?
Yeah, but if they had, for instance, if they found, like, it was a drug lab, they could seize my property.
So it was their way of telling you, listen, brother, stay away, let us do what we're doing, or, you know, we might find a drug lab here, and then it wouldn't
exactly
be your property anymore, and you might even be in jail.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're clearly letting me know, and my feeling was that they were in control.
So what have we got? We got some kind of national security hole now, or some what?
Well, excuse me. I assume by now they've made a lot of determinations about it, and it sounds like it's something they want. Today on my my answering machine, I had a message from my real estate agent.
Oh?
And he says that he had someone who is very interested in purchasing my property and would make me a very generous offer. Now, I haven't gotten back to him, but I think we put two and two together here. Somebody wants to get their hands on my property.
So what are you going to do, Mel? Are you going to accept the, quote, generous offer and get out of this with your skin intact and a few bucks, or are you going to, you're going to fight?
Well, that's a good question. That's one of the reasons why I didn't get back to my my agent today, you know, is that I wanted to sit down and think about it before I did anything. I don't know what their so-called very generous offer is. But on one side, you have a possible drug lab, and on the other side, you have a very generous offer. And so I would kind of be curious to know what their generous offer was.
Well, that's the carrot-stick approach, no question about it.
Yeah, they're working the both ends here, I think. And you know, like I say, I feel a lot calmer about this now than I did before. It was.
Now, you were almost panicked, weren't you?
Yeah. It was just a little bit too much.
All right, you did some measurements. People were asking about the weight of the line that you were putting into the hole. And so, what have you determined?
Yeah, I did some real quick and dirty work here with this here. First of all, when I was out there on the weekend, I was able to actually measure or weigh the line that's in the hole, and basically I tied it onto one of these little fisherman's scales, okay? And,
all right.
You know, it's a little spring operated thing there, but I had a weight on that, including the 1 pound sinker on there. It looks like it weighs about 17, 18 pounds.
What does?
The line that's in the hole.
In totality?
Yeah, the entire weight of the line. Basically, the line weighs 10 ounces for every 1,000 yards.
Okay, so 17 or 18 pounds.
Yeah.
It's 20-pound test line, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have got 1 pound down at the end of it, tied on the end of it, right?
That's right.
So
one of the things is it's this has become a moot point at this point, but if I drop much more line down there, and based on what your caller said, this line will break at probably at the top of the line, because that's where all the pressure will be. So
but you believe you're down 80,000 feet?
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt.
80,000 feet?
Eight with, what is that, four zeros on there?
Well, so a mile's 5,280 feet, so
yeah,
you can figure that's, it from there.
Someone's, I believe, I haven't done the math on there. I always forget how long a mile is. But
how long have you owned this property with a hole?
We've had the property for about 4 years now, and... you know, the guy that had it there had been there for a long time. I believe he'd been there for over 40 years. It's very rustic. I think I might have indicated to you we do not have electricity there. We do not have phone service.
No, it's just raw property, right?
Well, we have some buildings and the housing structures. All of those were basically damaged with the heavy snowfall.
All right, Mel, that's right. Recent snowfall. Mel, hold on. We'll be back after the bottom of the hour. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Stay right there. I'm Art Bell, and this is CBC.
The devil went down. down to Georgia. He was looking for a soul to steal. He was in a bind, but he was way behind, and he was willing to make a deal. When he came across this young man sawing on the fiddle and playing it hot, and the devil jumped up on a hickory stump and said, "Boy, let me tell you what. I guess you didn't know it, but I'm a fiddle player too. And if you'd care to take a dare, I'll make a bet with you. Now, you play pretty good fiddle, boy, but give the devil his due. I bet a fiddle is gold against your soul, because I think I'm better than you." The boy said, "My name's Johnny, and it might be a sin, but I'll take your bet you're going to regret, because I'm the best there's ever been. Johnny, you're awesome, you're a bow, and play your fiddle hard.
Now, back to Mel. And Mel, a lot of this audience would not have heard, but there was another little bit of the legend of the hole. Apparently, at some point, somebody threw a dead dog into the hole, right?
Oh, yeah, I was telling you about that before the other night. And, yeah, people throw everything in there. There's dead cows going down the hole. There's, you know, sheep, whatever, you name it, it's gone down there. One guy threw his old hunting dog down into the hole, I guess, as a form of burial. And the story that I heard was that the guy, the hunter, was out there hunting one day, and he saw his old departed dog. It looked exactly the same. In fact, it was wearing the same collar and the same tags on it. So he was absolutely, the story is, they were like absolutely believed the dog came back somehow.
And you believed it to the degree that you changed your will so that when you die, they were going to throw your body into the hole, right?
When I'm gone, I'm going to the hole.
Oh, well, but maybe not now, huh?
Well, that's a matter for conjecture. I, today, I didn't have a chance to mention this. After finding out, you know, the story about the black beam, you know, the other day I thought I'd go out there and do some more research amongst my neighbors who, you know, may have...
That makes sense. You can't go on the property. Might as well talk to the neighbors. Yeah. Sure.
And so, you know, you go out and buy them a cup of coffee and find out a few things here. Anyway, I had talked to one gentleman who's really quite elderly and has lived in the area for a long time, but he said that... Originally, and this is going way back, so this must go back about 40, 50, maybe longer, that there was a series of, around the hole, there was a series of stone columns. I said stone columns and...
Stone columns?
Yeah. And so I asked him, you know, could he like, I sketched out a little how the property looks there and see if he could place the stone columns on it.
Yeah.
So, you know, he drew it on a napkin there and I said, that's very interesting. Well, I had my power book with me, and I pulled up a picture of Stonehenge.
Yeah.
He says, that's exactly what the thing looked like.
You're kidding.
He said that they had these, like, pillars lined up, you know, in, just like that. He says it wasn't, you know, it didn't have that thing on the top, you know. They had some, like, things on top of the pillars, Stonehenge.
Oh, that's really odd. Listen, you can't get photographs, Mel. I'm sorry to interrupt, but I asked you about photographs. They won't let you close enough to take any photographs.
I was afraid to take pictures of the guards, to be honest with you.
No, I understand. How about a drawing, Mel? Can you get us a drawing?
Yeah, I could do that. I had a question for you. The night that I talked to you, you said you got another fax about another anomalous hole.
That's right.
Colville area?
Oh, that's right. That's exactly right. I've got that fax. And I'll try and get to it. But...
Okay. On Sunday, I listened to your show a bit, and you had Linda on talking about HARP.
That's right. Project HARP.
Now, HARP is supposed to look for...
Underground bunkers and tunnels and such, yes.
That's right.
Now, maybe it's looking at your hole. Who knows? Here's a fax for you. The following is a theory regarding Mel's property. One. Imagine two naturally occurring iron veins just happening to reach toward the Earth's surface around Manastash, Washington. There is a tremendous amount of naturally generated high-voltage electricity deep in the Earth. What if the bottom of the hole on Mel's property is a naturally occurring focal point, a lot like the device that Mr. Markham built? The Earth could have its own, in effect, time machine. Over the centuries, through various quakes and so forth, all of the soil above the portal would have fallen into the bottom and been launched into some other time. This explains the lack of echoes and the apparent depth of the hole
Tell Mel to lower a clock down there.
Well, let me tell you, I was over at the university library today, and you know, I wanted to find out a little bit more about Earth geology. And one of the things I found out is the crust, on average, on the Earth is about 20 miles deep.
Okay.
Now, underneath the crust, and this is something that a lot of people don't know about, there's something known as the MOHO discontinuity.
The what?
The MOHO, M-O-H-O discontinuity.
What is that?
It's named for a guy named Mohorovic. He was a Croatian seismologist. But I don't know much about seismology, but I'll tell you what I know about this discontinuity. P waves, and I guess those are seismic waves,
yeah,
through this discontinuity move faster than they do through the rest of the Earth. They, like, speed up.
Okay.
Normally they go like 7 kilometers per second. These are going like 8 kilometers per second when they go through there. And it's believed that it has to do with a chemical difference in the type in that area of the Earth. So you've got the crust, you have the MOHO discontinuity, then you have the mantle. And so that region is very, very little known, as you can well imagine, because you really can't get to it, at least not yet. And the scientists really don't understand that. But we have this thing that goes on underneath the crust that is very, very peculiar. And I just thought I might mention that there.
All right. Well, I don't know anything about that. That's very interesting. All I know is we had all kinds of cool plans. I mean, we were going to, I had, Mel, I'm telling you, I've got volunteers who are willing to go down in your hole, but now that's obviously not going to occur, because they have your hole. I mean, this is outrageous. This is your property.
Yeah, it is my property. That's the incredible thing. I could not step one inch onto my property. You know, my deepest incursion only got me onto the access road. I mean, I was kept way away from that thing there.
How far is it from the access road where you were stopped to the hole?
Oh, gosh. You'd have to travel, oh, gosh. I would say it's from the access road kind of, it's very hilly ground over there, so you kind of have to go around all the low spots there. You might go about a mile and a half or more. You can't even see the little, like, valley that I'm in.
Before you began dropping this monofilament line into the hole with a weight, you threw an entire refrigerator down this hole and then listened and listened and listened and never heard a thing?
Nothing. Nothing. The refrigerator, I didn't hear anything. I mean, I expected, you know, I mean, something that massive, you know, and I expected something. But, I've thrown things there that I knew would make interesting sounds, like television tubes, picture tubes.
Yeah, they explode.
Yeah, those are my favorite. And, I couldn't get an explosion or anything out of them. So I have not heard anything actually touch bottom in that thing.
I mean, it's almost impossible, it seems.
You know, I mean, if the hole right now, I don't know, is 15, 16, 17 miles, you know, how long would it take for the sound to travel back, you know, if it is hitting bottom? Let's say it's hitting bottom at, say, 15 miles. How long would it take? Or would I hear it at all? You know, those are things, I don't know. I mean,
don't think so. I mean, you don't hear things that occur. Well, on the other hand, though, it's a channeled.
It sure is.
I don't know the physics involved in such a deep hole. Have you ever heard of any other holes?
No. That's why I was curious about the Colville hole. I did find out that actually the deepest mine is like 2.3 miles into the Earth.
So this is way, way beyond anything that anybody's ever heard about.
Yeah, but that's a mine. That's, you know, that's a mine structure. Another thing I was curious about was that channel that they built underneath the English Channel.
Oh, yes, yes,
England,
yes.
And France. How deep is, not how deep it is, but how long is it? You know, is it several miles? Or
I almost rode on it. It's funny you should mention. I almost rode on it last time I was in London, but I didn't. So I don't exactly know. I saw the entrance to it. I rode right by the entrance to it.
I would be leery of going into that thing.
Well, then you certainly wouldn't want to go in. Would you go in this hole? Your hole, if you could?
I anticipate what will be going down into hole in the future will be federal prisoners, I imagine.
will be going down there on a non-voluntary basis, I assume, because, I mean, these, you know, if we're talking the government here, which it is obviously the government that's been interested in this, they have every piece of technology they could ever want. They could send down cameras, they could send down whatever they wanted, you know. So, you know, I assume at some point if they determined that it was safe for a human being to go down, they'll send a person down, you know, when they take air readings, if it's got good air, bad air, you know, find out what's going on. I'd say that, you know, they would do that. You know, I'm, you know, just like a, you know, poor, ordinary little guy here who doesn't have a lot of technology as back.
Well, how would you like to get a whole bunch of citizens together, Mel, and yeah. and go marching on that property and challenge their authority to take your property like that?
Well, we talked about that over coffee with the guy that told me about the stones out there, you know, saying, you know, I mean, you know, we're pretty, we're big on property rights here.
Yeah, this is your hole, not theirs.
And you know, very, very militant about that. And they said, you know, how can they do that here? The truth is, you know, if they say a plane crashed on property,
yeah.
And I don't have any evidence of that. But, I mean, you know, I expect to see some smoke. But, you know, if they're telling people this is an accident scene, we got to do an investigation, you know, FAA and all that business there. And
all right, did they tell you what kind of airplane, civilian,
no.
military, or what?
No.
All right. Well, are there any reports? I mean, after all, you can check on plane crashes, right?
First of all, over here, if a kid throws a snowball at your car,
yeah.
in the wintertime, that makes the newspaper. I mean, so...
So there
I
should mean, have been big news if a plane went down
you bet. I mean, we've had planes go down here before. I mean, we've had planes go down, you know, on the other side of the mountains and makes newspaper here. I mean, you know, that's a big deal here.
All right, well, look, then instead of a crowd of civilians, maybe that was a bad idea, how about a crowd of media? I mean, I could get Seattle media by your side and go marching right up to that group. Right up to the barrier.
Yeah, and then I end up being a convicted drug cooker. I am, you know, that's.
They actually said that to you.
Those were almost verbatim the exact words they said. You know, we could find a drug lab on this property if you get my drift. You know, just very easily.
All right. Mel, let's take a few calls, see if anybody has any ideas. This one has me stumped. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello. Hello there.
Yes. this is Robert in Milwaukee.
Hi, Robert.
Art, I just had a thought connecting Stephen Greer at C-City with what he said on concerning interplanetary travel. And drew a connection to the cloning. I find it very interesting that the scientists say they're not going to consider cloning humans.
Oh, baloney. That's a bunch of crap. You know, don't listen to that. Excuse me for a second, Mel, on the subject of cloning. You know, all day I've been listening to this drivel from the scientists of about the cloning thing, that we're not going to do it. Oh, well, yes, this technology will allow cloning, but we're not going to do it. That is utter garbage, and when we get around to talking about cloning, which we will, we're going to talk about it in an entirely different vein, because unless you are naive beyond belief, spending your time talking about whether we should or shouldn't, will or won't, is baloney, because we will. I guess you can say, should we? Huh. But we will, I guarantee we're going to clone. Anyway, that is not tonight's subject or the moment's subject. Mel's hole is, first time caller line, you're on the air.
Hey, Mel?
Yeah, hi there.
Hi there.
Where are you, sir?
I'm in Oregon. My name's Pete.
All right, Pete.
Okay.
Where in Oregon are you?
In Corvallis.
Corvallis, okay. I know what that is, sure.
Okay, yeah. I was listening to the show, and I guess it's a delayed broadcast out here. I was listening to earlier stuff.
No, this is about Mel's hole.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, sir.
And, I would just say to Mel that you need to get in contact with just about every media person that you can think of and get him out there.
He's done that with me, and I agree with you. I just said to Mel that he should take, you know, like an army of cameras out there. But
yeah, exactly.
He's afraid that he's going to end up in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
he's got a point. Well, I mean, suppose the army of cameras with Mel in tow arrive, and they and there's feds there saying, "Sorry, this is a crime scene." Is this Mel Waters? Well, you're under arrest, Mel.
Well, I have to tell you that as far as what I believe is now that the surface of the hole there has been, you know, there's a lot of snow on the property. It's been covered up with snow. I think that's what the yellow gear was there for, is to, you know, groom it all so you can't see it from the air.
Well, I think there's a lot of questions that need to be answered.
And
if the military's out there, if there was a plane crash, I think the media would want to know what kind of plane it was, who was flying it.
I will.
Well, you see, the thing is, I'm the one that's saying that there was a plane crash.
Yeah, Mel, I'll tell you something. And for what it's worth, if it was a civilian airplane that crashed, that would be in the news. If it was a regular military airplane that crashed, that would be in the news. But there are some type of aircraft that crash, Mel, that, it, believe me, it does not make the news. We have them out here. They crash, and you see the military cordon off miles of area, and there's no news about it at all. You know, this secret aircraft that fly and crash. But I don't think that's what happened there, and neither do you.
No, I don't believe that anything crashed there, because I didn't have the smell of the smoke. I didn't see any smoke. It was a beautiful, beautiful clear day. I mean, if there was any, and it wasn't particularly windy, if there was a crash, there'd be evidence of it. There'd be smoke clouds.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I would be very cautious, Mel, about accepting a generous offer for the property with a hole, because you know what? No matter what else, Mel, your hole is worth millions of dollars. If it's what you say it is, if it's as deep as you say it is, man, you could fence a property and sell tickets.
Well, I think I also mentioned that they actually moved onto the property several mobile, one of those like temporary buildings.
Oh.
They actually moved that onto the property.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one of the neighbors says he saw like almost like a parade of these things going out there, like 3-4 of them. Plus some generator equipment there, too.
Oh, my God.
That stuff.
How long after the broadcast did this parade begin?
Well, Saturday night I was out there pretty late.
We did the broadcast between, I think, 3 and 4 o'clock Pacific time Saturday morning.
Yeah, so I got some sleep, you know, and I went out there, you know, in the evening and did my weighing of the line in the hole. And that's when I saw the first helicopter out there. And that was a very strange experience. I actually looked up at this thing here for about 20 minutes, you know. There were more helicopters out there Saturday morning early, several of them coming in and out. That was Saturday morning. That was Sunday morning. And then by today, the chronology is getting real confusing for me, but
now yesterday, I guess, really.
I lost a day in here, Mark. What they saw is actually some mobile buildings being moved onto the property. Apparently, some generators there. Again, I have no power or phone on the property. There, you know, we use cell phone if we need to make a call. And we used to use solar out there, too.
Well, I feel in a way guilty, Mel, but your original facts got me going.
Well,
and there was no way not to follow up on that. And I guess once we aired that, it was too late. It was a done deal.
When I originally approached this thing here, you know, what I wanted to do was to, you know, get some good ideas about the nature of this thing here. I guess I was pretty naive about it.
All right, Mel, one thing I've got to ask you.
Yeah.
Don't think me rude, but no, I've got to ask, Mel.
Yeah.
That's not a drug lab you've got out there, is it?
No. We are working with Native American plants. They're plants that Native Americans used in making this was a Northern Nevada doctor back in World War One time who found a cure for the flu. He gave this stuff to his... he was a military doctor. Gave it to the people under his command.
All right, Mel. Hold on. We're going to do a break here at the top of the hour. We'll be back to you. Mel Waters, the guy with the endless hole, is my guest. We will start taking some calls. Anybody have any advice for Mel or thoughts on all of this? Yikes. CBC in action. All right, Back now to Mel and the dilemma of the endless hole. Mel, are you there?
I am here, Art.
All right. There are some people with questions. Do you have anything else you want to say?
Just that, you know, just after beginning to explore this thing here, you know, with the help of your audience and, you know, further questioning on, you know, people, you know, that live around in my area here, asking them, you know, really, do you remember anything strange about the hole in particular?
Well, I would say a resurrected dog would be pretty good.
It just becomes more and more mysterious. I have no way of understanding any of that.
I would say a darker than dark beam that seems to go straight up into the sky would be pretty strange.
That to me was utterly fascinating.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, the hole itself is dark, but for it to send out darkness, you know, into the sky, to me was just absolutely
I couldn't begin to explain it.
I mean, it was, you know, the way he described it was just.
All right. Look,
yeah.
Let's bring some people on. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello, where are you?
This is Philip in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Hello, Philip. How you doing?
Great. Love your show.
Thank you.
Mel, what type of work do you do for a living?
Uh-huh.
Well, I'm a retired person.
Criminal record of any kind?
Pardon me?
No criminal record or anything?
No criminal record.
I'd find a lawyer and get a local group of citizens and press and militia, and that's a good reason why we need the militias in this country, is to prevent this type of situation from happening. The government coming in, taking over your property, threatening your life. You know, I would call their bluff. I don't see how they can.
Well, that's easy to say. You know, from a distance, I'm not sure I'd call their bluff. I've got to be honest. Look, if you had a property, sir, and you're trying to get on it, and they had it all roped off, and they said, go away, you know, we could find...
I would come back with a gun.
Well...
And they haul in a bunch of...
Then
trailer.
You know what you'd be? You'd be a dead martyr. You take a gun up to a military...
No, I'd have the press with me, and, I mean, I would not go at this alone.
Oh, I see.
You know, but they're not going to drag in a bunch of military trailers to examine... A drug lab.
Well,
that's just not logical.
I agree with you. So they're obviously after the secret of the hole. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hi, this is Stan from San Diego.
Hi, Stan.
I just got a question there for Mel. If there was any way that you could charter a plane so you can do a flyover of your property?
I suppose I could do that. I mean, there is a small airport here in Ellensburg, and I'm sure that can be arranged for. What I'd be interested to know is if actually planes can fly over that area, and I suppose I could try to find that out.
To get some photographs.
Yeah, but again, I do believe that the hole itself has been covered over with you know, the surrounding snow. They probably did a really nice job with what they brought in there of you know, keeping it invisible from the air. You know, that was my speculation of why they brought the yellow gear out, as to you know, kind of dress it up a little bit there so that you know, anyone casually going over there wouldn't notice anything. That's just my opinion.
Okay, and another thing is I got a little assumption of why none of the animals want to go by there.
Why?
Maybe they see the apparition of the dead dog, and it's warning them not to go there.
Maybe. Oh. Maybe. I mean, that's pure conjecture. Who knows? But no animals will go near it?
You know, the observations I made was my dogs and other people's dogs, that come visit, you know, they won't go there. If I put them on a leash and try to drag them there, they'll dig their feet in there, and it just will not budge.
You know what, Mel? I once was on a trip with my family going to Florida. We used to go to Florida, drive to Florida in the winter, and we once got near a slaughterhouse and on one of our stops. And, man, I had a golden retriever, and that golden wouldn't get anywhere. He did the same thing. He dug his feet in, and I don't care how you'd pull, he wouldn't get any. He could smell the death.
Well, when I was in college, I had a brought from school a human skull, and I brought it home, put it on the coffee table. My cat walked into the room, and he saw that thing, and the cat literally jumped backwards about 8 feet.
I bet.
when he saw that. Now, how did the cat know?
Sense. They sense these things.
Yeah.
There's something about it. First time caller line, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hey, Art, this is Scott from Kirkland, Washington.
Yes, sir. Oh,
hi, right. Scott, Washington.
Yeah, not only from Kirkland, I've only been over on my side of the mountain for a little while, but born and bred in Yakima and a graduate of Central Washington University.
Cool.
Spent a lot of time in Ellensburg.
Yes.
In fact, I sat around with one of my old professors who is one of these guys who has been living in the area for, oh, God, forever. And he actually had told me rumors one morning over coffee, sitting down in one of the little restaurants about mm-hmm. a great big hole that nobody knew the bottom of.
Wow.
We'd actually heard of this. This was back, 1989?
Mm-hmm.
Sometime about in there, and we even heard that. And the one thing, it really surprises me, this guy that was saying, well, I took a gun in the media up there. What a lot of people don't realize, Art, and I think that most people don't realize, is he lives about, depending on where the hole is, between 5 and 10 miles away from one of the largest military reservations in the Pacific Northwest, possibly the western United States.
It is okay. Humongous out there.
The Yakima Firing Center is where they did all of the training for Desert Storm. They have a bunch of satellite dishes up there that theoretically don't exist, that they use for talking to satellites that aren't there. And all sorts of things, very interesting things go on up there. And so something like this, a hole appearing within spitting distance of this military reservation, it doesn't really surprise me a whole lot that they had trucks and stuff out there in a lightning bulb.
Hey, Mel, do we know how long that hole has actually been there? I mean,
I can probably trace this hole back, actual recollections, to for a solid 40 years before I got there, and the previous owner said it was there the next owner back. Before that, I don't know if anyone owned the property. I suppose I could check on that to see, from the records there, if there's been any, ownership of it, or was, whatever. But I can trace it back for a good solid 40 years, at least, from the verbatim accounts from the previous owner. I don't really know. I would venture to say that given the nature of it, that has been there for a very, very long time. I'm talking, not just decades there. I mean, how can this thing just be there? It has to be ancient.
Well, I wish you the best in figuring out what it is, and we're all of us local here, we're going to keep tuned in to see if there's anything worth driving back across the mountains to hang out and see.
Well, I've just been out here for just a couple of years. I decided to retire out here and pursue, my mm-hmm. interest in alternative health, and this is what I get.
All right. Well, it's turned into a nightmare.
Yes.
An absolute nightmare. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Yeah. About that hole.
Yes, sir.
There was a Rod Sterling thing I saw on the TNT. I think about 4 years ago. He was hosting, it was like, must have been early 80s, late 70s, and there were reenactments of, like, these true occurrences.
Yeah.
And there was a whole story about a boy, it looked like it was took place in, like, when they still rode horses or something, and a boy woke up with his dog missing or something, and he went looking for his dog and fell into a hole, except, he didn't fall in, he hung onto the edge and crawled out. And went and told his dad, and his dad went out there, and they heard noises coming out of it.
Oh, God.
And so they didn't think it was the dog making the noises because it sounded real spooky and stuff. So he went to town and got a bunch of guys to go out there with him, and I guess a bunch of guys went out there, and they thought, well, let's lower a rope in, and somebody's going to have to go down on it.
Sure.
And so the dad said, well, I'll do it since, you're looking for your dog and stuff. And they lowered him down, and he made this scream, deadly scream. And so they brought him up, and I guess after that, after they brought him up, he went clinically insane for the rest of his life.
All right. Well, I hope you're not in any danger of going clinically insane, Mel.
I hope not.
But you sounded close to being discombobulated when I spoke with you. When was that?
That was Sunday afternoon, I think.
Was that Sunday afternoon?
So Sunday evening, something like that. Yeah, I was. Yeah,
I mean, you called me up and you were just a wreck.
Yeah, I was. Negative, fearful emotion I had it there. I mean, I was shaking. I was sweating. I was. My body was doing things that I couldn't explain. I was a wreck.
What do you think about the idea of you're not even going out, but sending the media out?
I could do that as in terms of, you know, saying I think there's something interesting going on over there, and you know, send them out there, and what I assume that'll happen is if they did go, if they thought it was a valid story, they'll say, look, we're conducting military exercises on this land here, and there's nothing for you to see. You know, and I think that'll be it. Again, this guy was real clear to me. He said, look, I asked him, I said, look, I suppose you don't want me to talk to anybody about this. And he said, hey, no one's going to believe you anyway. You know, you could tell them anything you want. You know, why are they going to believe you?
All right. Well, first time caller line, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
Maxine in Southern California.
Hi, Maxine.
I am very interested in the conversation that's been going on with Mel. I heard the program the other night, and, you know, he's really in a big dilemma.
Well, he is now. And I feel somewhat responsible. But,
I understand that. You know, the first thing he needs to do is get a good lawyer, somebody that's prominent like that, I can't recall his name, Spence from Wyoming, that's...
Jerry Spence.
Jerry Spence, somebody like that. And maybe your listeners could do a writing to Janet Reno, the president or the vice president, on his behalf. Keep him in the background, because with the power they've got, you know, they can just wrap him up and we might never hear from him again.
Yeah, that's right. I guess I'm going to have to stay in touch with you, Mel, to be sure that you don't meet some...
They're working me from both sides here, as far as I can tell.
What it sounds like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it looks like I guess it's like the Godfather. They want to make me an offer I can't refuse.
There's a lot of armchair soldiers out there, Mel, and they're going to say, what's the matter with you? You've got to get in there and fight. Tell them to go to hell. But the fact of the matter is, if I were in your situation, I might be very disinclined to fight. I might be much more inclined to take a, quote, generous offer and get out from under while I can.
If I actually get to talk to somebody in a position of authority who wants to sit down and talk turkey, and I'm not talking about my real estate agent, I'm gonna ask for, like, a relocation to another country is what I'm going to do.
You want to be sent out of the country?
Yeah, I'd like to be sent to, like, Australia, for instance, you know, like where what Stan Deo is, you know.
Be an expatriate.
Some place that's geologically sound.
Okay. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel, who's still an American at this moment.
Hi, my name's Brad. I'm calling from Lexington, Kentucky.
Hi, Brad.
Hi. When I heard about this hole, it kind of reminded me of the story with the hole they dug. I think it was in Europe or Scandinavia.
Scandinavia.
They lowered a microphone.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. That was an Associated Press story, and they lowered a microphone in, and they heard the screaming, agonized sounds of thousands of people in agony, they said. That was an actual AP story. Now, it may have turned out to have been not true, but AP ran that story.
So, I don't know. I mean, maybe it's the entrance to hell. I don't know.
there isn't even an echo that comes out of this. I mean, you don't even hear anything.
And plus, and as far as the animals not wanting to go near it, you know.
There is that, but he says there's not a sound. I mean, it's totally dead, right, Mel?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, unless you hit the side of the thing there when it's, When you drop something in and it's, like, close to the surface, you know, you hear it there. But after a certain point, you wouldn't hear anything anyway.
Now, when you dropped a refrigerator in, I'm curious how you can drop a refrigerator. Now, 9 feet, 9 inches, pretty good size diameter.
Oh, yeah.
But how do you get the fridge in the middle to drop it so that you don't slam it into the sides?
Well, you get like one of your buddies over there, and you get it over there on its, you know, so it's like leaning over on its back, and you slide it over on the stone wall, and then just kind of give it a shove, and it just sort of goes straight down.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's not too difficult. I mean, we've been throwing stuff in it, you know, that hole of all sorts of descriptions here, and believe me, you know, we've done it. I mean, you know, it's a cow is a pretty big thing, but people have gotten cows down in there, so you just about throw anything down.
Actually,
there.
Almost disgusting.
Yes.
In fact, the bottom of the hole, if there is a bottom to the damn thing, must be truly disgusting—a mixture of horrible things of earth that should not have been thrown in there. Mel, can you hold on?
Oh, yeah, I'll be
all right. Well, we'll do one more half hour, and we'll be right back. It is a strange and wonderful world out there, is it not? Stay right there.
Trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue and clouds of white, the bright blessed.
Tonight on Coast to Coast AM with Art Bell. It's an encore presentation featuring the best of Art Bell and his guest, Mel Waters, with the story of Mel's Hole, the bottomless pit in Washington State. Art will be back live tomorrow night with his guest, best-selling author Dean Koontz.
It absolutely is. Good morning, everybody. Mel is my guest. She's got a hole. Mel's Hole, we call it. And now let's go back and give him a little challenge, all right? Mel, are you there?
I'm here.
All right. I've got a couple of faxes here that are not kind, Mel. They say this
good
man is lying, his voice is shaking so much, he's stuttering, he's searching for words, he's in a bind because you're paying attention to his fable, you know, his made-up story, they're saying, and you have to come up with something that would keep you from finding out about his lie. So here's another one that says, Mel's hoax. Art, you've fallen for another one. Well, I am a little naive, and I like stories like yours, Mel, and so I do tend to go for them. Is it, I mean, do you swear that this is absolutely the truth?
Well, look, I would have rather not have talked or called or faxed or anything in regards to this subject at all.
Yeah, the people need to understand, you faxed me, but I'm the one who called you.
I would have preferred, to be honest with you, to be there tomorrow morning, letting a little more line down into the hole, and just going along my merry way.
And getting you on the air stopped all that, and plus put the idiots there that are there taking hold of your...
You know, when you have a situation about belief, and what do you believe in and what you don't believe in,
yeah.
You know, a couple of days ago, we had this guy shoot a bunch of people on the Empire State Building.
That's right.
The Empire State Building's been there for like 60 years or whatever. And today I heard that they put metal detectors in the Empire State Building.
It figures.
Now, for 60 years, people believed that the Empire State Building was a safe place to be. That was belief. And in one day, people no longer believe. So beliefs change.
Yeah,
you know, and that's how I view beliefs. You know, is should they've had a metal detector on it for 60 years?
All right, look, let me ask you this: you have neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
They know about the hole.
They've been there. They've put their trash in it.
They put their trash in it. Would any of your neighbors talk, or do you think they're scared now too?
I'd be happy to talk to them and see if they want to talk to you.
All right,
and. You know, I'd be happy. If they want to talk, I'll fax you a phone number.
That's great, Mel. Work on that one. That's at least one other angle to approach this with. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Where are you, please?
I'm in Cameron, Texas.
All right,
gentlemen, how wide is that hole?
It's 9 3/4 feet.
9 3/4 feet.
Nine feet, that's the diameter. 9 feet 9 inches in diameter, he said.
Okay, Mel, through the library, why don't you go tomorrow, and they can network books all over the United States. And there's one called The Phantom of the Poles by William Reed. And there's one called The Hollow Earth by Dr. Raymond Bernard.
Okay.
And I'll guarantee you that'll open your eyes, because the earth is hollow. They've never proved the earth is solid. And if it poles, it's totally a hole, and it's about 1,400 miles wide. And people can't see across it, and they don't realize they're going into the earth. But Admiral Byrd flew 1,700 miles inside the earth, and they shut it up. So the government's up to something here.
All right. As a matter of fact, here's a fax, Mel, saying, regarding the hole, it sounds to me like the government's going to take the hole and give Mel the shaft.
That is what it sounds like.
West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Well.
Another fantastic story, Art.
Yeah, I know.
I appreciate you taking my call.
Sure.
I have a friend of mine who also believes in the Hollow Earth story. And I've read two scriptures in the Bible, which I won't quote, because I know you don't like to talk about that.
That's right.
But there's one that talks about making graven images of things.
Yeah.
And that would be even things that are under the earth. And then there's a...
Well, what are you driving at, though?
Well, there are scriptures in the Bible that also allude to a hollow earth.
Oh.
And so there's one in Revelation that talks about there's... they were looking all around to try and find somebody who was worthy to open the scrolls or the seals or something. And even under the earth, no one was found.
All right. Mel, are you a religious person?
I wouldn't categorize myself as a religious person,
So then you don't necessarily feel there's any religious significance to the whole?
I'm starting to believe that there's some supernatural significance to the whole, but,
the dog part and the other thing about the beam of the blackness, that certainly would lead in that direction, but on the other hand, things that we don't understand, Mel, seem as magic.
Yeah, they do. And those are things that I cannot understand, you know, and so I have to say I don't understand it.
All right, look here. Do you want any help from your representative? In other words, it may be that your state senator or your local representative, congressional representative, would help you out, and we could help you out with that too. In other words, fight power with power. That's an idea from John in Redding, California, and it's not a bad one necessarily.
Well, my local congressperson is Doc Hastings out here, and
uh-huh.
he is one of those guys that believes in property rights and so forth, and so that would be an avenue. Again, this is an opportunity for me to gain as much information as I'm also disseminating, and I'm going to have to make a decision. When I go in one direction or go in another direction, that will be it. There's not going to be a point where I could take it back.
All right, well, here's another one for you to consider. I've got connections at Strange Universe, Hard Copy, all those kinds of shows. I could have those people in contact with you in 2 seconds flat, Mel. Once you decide which way you want to go, I can have either media power or a government power, representation, to help you out here.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to, the main thing I have to do is decide, is this tantalizing enough for me to move forward and, say, well, I want to claim this as my own. I want to deal with it on my own basis.
Yeah.
Do I want to get out of it? Do I want to get into trouble? I mean, these are the considerations that I have here.
All right. Here's somebody saying, what about your local sheriff? Now, that is an idea. They're usually pretty friendly guys. Do you have a good local sheriff?
We have a local police department here, and then we have a sheriff's department. But and they're all great. They're all wonderful people. I mean, every last one of them is a great guy. But I don't know. I don't even know how I would approach this here. My property is being illegally used.
There's no question about it. No question about it. And you have the deed, right? You can prove this.
Oh, I can prove it's my property. What I don't know is, how can the government use your property? At what point do they develop an authority to use your property? Let's say a plane crashed there, which is what I was told. Well, then they'd have a right to,
salvage the plane, do whatever they're going to do.
All right.
And
let me
they would establish a right to it.
All right. Here's Daryl in Rancho Mirage who says, kidding aside, Mel's hole, if in fact he is sitting on top of an access point to an extraordinary depth, he's also right on top of a whole bunch of trouble. The potential military scientific significance can go as deep as one's imagination allows. One thing is for sure. The government doesn't have this kind of response to retrieve an old refrigerator. I think Mel better get an attorney presto if he doesn't have one already. Remember, if they accuse him of a drug-related violation, they can RICO that property in a flash.
That is exactly what I believe. And again, I have something on the property. I have an old Prowler trailer out there that's been gutted. And it's where I do a lot of the work I do with the plants they have. And, you know, I have solvents there. I have alcohol there. I have drying equipment out there. And, you know, it would take them 30 seconds to make it look like a methamphetamine lab or whatever it is. I mean, it's already my lab. I mean, that's where I do my work.
I hear you. All right. First time caller line. You're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Where are you?
Hello, I'm calling from Reno, Nevada.
Reno, okay. Speak up good and loud for us, huh?
Okay. Art, I'm sorry, but I just feel like you've got somebody there that's got quite an imagination.
Well, you're talking to him. So, I mean, I've just said the same thing to him. Some of the faxes that I've been receiving are saying that, obviously. People don't believe.
I just hope that you don't get all wound up in this.
Well, I get wound up in all kinds of things, dear. I'm not going to stop. That's what I do. Don't worry about me.
Oh, okay. Well, I was just...
But, I mean, if you doubt some part of Mel's story, go ahead and say so to Mel. He's here.
Mel, I think that you're looking for some kind of notoriety for some reason, and I think that you think everybody is pretty gullible that is listening to Art Bell's program. And that you're taking unfair advantage of him.
All right, you've got to remember, dear, I called him.
But didn't he originally fax
me? Yes, he did. He faxed me with information. As a matter of fact, I read the fax at the beginning of the program with Mel tonight. And I read it over the air. So he didn't anticipate that I would call him, didn't ask me to call him. And I had to look up at the top of the fax to get the fax ID to call him. So... that's the truth of the matter. I have no way of knowing, of course, whether Mel's weaving us a story or not, except his word, and I can't imagine why he'd lie.
I to be honest with you, and you know, since you're from Reno, and the main, if I wanted to be on the air talking about something, I'd much rather talk about my work with Indian Herbal Remedies. That would be the thing that I would be preferred to be talking about. It just so happens that the materials I'm working from are from northern Nevada, from your local Indians out there, and they're the ones that have provided me with the line of research that I'm doing. I have, you know, this whole thing is secondary, you know, but if I had a topic I really wanted to speak about,
it would be that,
would be
huh?
It.
All right, I understand. All right. East of the Rockies, you are on the air with Mel. Hello.
Will, WTDY, Madison, Wisconsin. Hello,
yes,
fellas.
Hi.
Allegedly
Hi.
Zionists, allegedly anti-religion Zionists, with billions of U.S. dollars profits.
What does this have to do with...
...makers and currency future derivatives markets.
All right, well, I don't know where he's always going all over the place where it has nothing to do with our topic. First time caller line, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Hi, this is Flo from Vancouver, B.C.
Yeah, hi there.
I just think your last caller, the female caller, must have a wild imagination herself. But I have two questions here. Number one, is he called a psychic by any chance? Or
well,
looked into that?
You know, that is a thought. I mean,
look, when after you know, if I decide, you know, to basically take the money and run.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still want to know what's down there. Okay. I want some mechanism to know. I mean, my original line of inquiry really was, is this the deepest hole around? I mean, that was my original question I put forward. And, you know, I think I got an answer to that. But now I'd like to know, what the heck is this thing? No, so that's where I'm coming from now. And one way or another, I mean, I think I'm at the point where I'm open up. My beliefs are such that if we had a psychic look at it, a remote viewer, I don't, whatever – mm-hmm. that I would be willing to accept, you know, what they have to say about this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they looked into it and saw what was at the bottom or what was going on over there,
mm-hmm.
I think at this point I can accept that. Boy, I tell you what, I've had to accept in the last couple of days here, I can accept anything at this point.
All right. Thank you.
I know a really good psychic, and I know I'm going to be asking her tomorrow.
All right. Thank you, dear.
Can I ask a second question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. What does he think the odds are of someone going ahead and finding out who he is and calling the media and...
Well, we've had his full name on the air, for one thing.
Yeah, I noticed.
All right. So, Mel, what do you think the odds are that somebody will... I mean, obviously, as a result of the first broadcast, look what's happened. So the media may descend on you, Mel.
They very well could. And as the guy said at the road here, it says, we already know where you're at. So,
well, what are you going to do if the media... I mean, suppose tomorrow KOMO or one of the big Seattle broadcasters comes to you and says, look, we got a camera crew. Tell us where the property is. We want to go out and investigate.
I suppose if they wanted to go there, I would lead them to the access road there and say, here, I'm out of here. You know, you take a look. You talk to these guys here. You find out what's going on. And, you know, and then I'll watch it on the news tonight. But you won't find me anywhere near that, you know.
I hear you. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel. Hello.
Yes, sir. This is Skip in Sacramento, KSTE.
Yes.
A couple things for you, sir. The hole that he is talking about, his 80,000 feet, comes up to 15.15 miles deep.
Sounds right.
The Mohorovicic discontinuity he's talking about came in the International Geophysical Year. I believe that was back in the early 80s, maybe even the 50s. I'm getting so old I don't remember now. It's called IGGY, the International Geophysical Year, where all the world population took part. Checking the depth of the shelf underneath the oceans and the molten mass down to the core and so on, how deep it was. There was a discontinuity. It wasn't even. And that's why it's called a discontinuity. It was named after this fellow Mohorovicic.
Exactly.
Your glue stuff, you know, was developed for surgery for smashed spleens and kidneys. It made to glue skin better than anything else.
Yeah, well, trust me, it works real well, sir. Thank you very much. It even glues carts into rocks. I don't want to talk about it. First time caller line, you're on the air with Mel. Hello. Oh, I think we just missed him. Wild card line, you're on the air with Mel. Good morning.
Hi, Art and Mel.
Hi.
Hey, hello. Aaron calling from Reno.
Yes, sir.
Good.
I have a couple of questions and a comment. Mel, I don't know if anybody's asked you yet, but have you ever seen a UFO out around in that area on your property?
No, good question.
You know, out here, you're liable to see all sorts of things, and I myself have not seen anything personally. I mean, this is one of those areas that can get pretty remote in a hurry. You know, Ellensburg is like 30 miles away on either side from the nearest town.
Matter of fact, Mel, I've got a lot of confirmation of that. Faxes and phone calls, people saying it is a very weird area.
Yeah.
And they've heard stories there about holes. So, you know, this is not that far out. A lot of people are saying, yes, there's a lot of weird stuff going on in that area. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel.
It's Fred from Sitka.
Sitka,
Alaska.
Alaska, all right.
Yeah, and just like to say that, I thought the days of you'll just disappear ended with the Reagan administration. And Art, I'm very disappointed that you will not be coming to Sitka on your Alaska cruise.
Well,
you're going to be missing out there.
We're hitting quite a few cities, sir, but Sitka is not one of them. Sorry about that. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Mel.
This is Paula in Kansas City, and I want to tell Mel that I believe him entirely. And I think that Jerry Spence's idea is a great idea, and it's probably a good story for Linda Moulton Howe to go check out.
I've already given it to Linda, as a matter of fact.
Oh, that's great. And I think if he's told over 10 million people on the air that he's been threatened, that they're going to falsely accuse him of having a drug farm out there or something, and he got a really good lawyer like Jerry Spence, they would never be able to follow through on that, especially if he had a bunch of media attention like Strange Universe and stuff out there.
Well, that was another idea. There's a whole bunch of ideas here on the table.
Yeah, I really think he should go for it. And I totally disagree with that lady who thinks he just wants attention.
All right. Well, I appreciate the call. Thank you. I did call Mel, folks. That's the truth. Yeah, he faxed me. But
but I'm the guy who dug out the number and called him. He didn't really want to go on the air, for the record. Wildcard line, you're on the air.
Finally, I got through. Hello, Art. Hello, Mel. How are you?
Okay.
Mel.
Yes.
Now, with this hole and these people who are on your land, you have to understand they are listening to this radio program right now.
I'm sure.
I'm absolutely certain of it. And you also have to understand these are military spooks. They are doing whatever they're doing right now. And anything that you do through the standard channels, like you know, getting a lawyer or anything along those lines, is going to serve only as a delay tactic. I would suggest to you that you do some research. If it was a plane crash, there is radar coverage of that area, I'm certain.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
There would be a record of it somewhere.
Well, unless...
If it's an airplane crash, where's the NTSB?
Well, hold on. Look, I live out here in Nevada, and I can tell you because there's been some experimental planes that have crashed out here. And A, it does not get into the media. B, the military cordons off the entire area, and trust me, you don't get anywhere near it. I know personally that's true.
All you need to do is contact one of the air traffic controllers for the area and find out if there's any record of anything in that area at that time. You can also find out, I mean, if it's an air crash, where's the NTSB? If it has anything to do with drugs, where's the DEA or the drug task force for that area, whatever it might be called? If there is anything to do with anything else as far as the geological properties of the area, you can find all this information out from USGS. You can get satellite photos and infrared. You can get anything you want.
Yeah, these are all good ideas. Although I think the plane crash story is an obvious falsehood. It's a lie. And, you know, Mel, again, they told you, look, they could find a drug lab there. So the plane crash story was obviously a cover, and the story about the lab was obviously a threat.
Yeah.
Plain and simple. So, my friend, I don't know what you're going to do now.
I'm going to think about it. I'm going to call the realtor tomorrow for one and ask him. I would prefer not to talk to him, but talk to someone, you know.
I would ask him, too, who is making the offer? They have to tell you who's making the offer.
Sure. Well, you see, this property is not for sale. I mean, I don't have a listing out there. So
well,
I'm
yeah,
approached.
But you can make an offer on anything, though.
I suppose you could.
Yeah, you can get a realtor and make an offer, and they will come and give you that offer. So, look, I don't know what else to say or do, Mel.
Well,
if there's any way I can help you, if there's any media contacts or political contacts I can supply you with that will help when you decide what you're going to do, come to me. If there are any significant further developments that you want, or you get some neighbors who want to come on the air, I'll put them on. If you get any drawings, I'll put them up on the website. I'll do whatever I can do to help you, and I feel a little guilty about having solicited you on the air in the first place and causing all this.
Well, look, I'm pretty rattled about this, I have to say, and I'm usually a bit more articulate than I have been, and... I apologize for that. This
Look,
is
people
a really
are,
stressful
yeah.
situation.
No, I understand. People are just nasty, Mel. That's
that,
all.
No, that's fine. And I generally find that usually the people that are the most well-spoken are generally the ones that you really have to watch out for. You know? And,
I know.
I think, you know, that's always a good thing to bear in mind. And so, you know, I got some thinking to do about this, Art, and I... you know, I appreciate everything that everyone has said. I think I've moved forward in this in terms of, you know, actually being able to resolve this within my mind, and I think for that it was good. Quite honestly, your involvement with this may not, you know, it may be happening now because of your involvement, but it may be could be happening a year from now without your involvement.
Yeah, and everybody out there ought to consider,
you know,
something
so
like this could happen to anybody.
10 million people, or how many are out there, they know about this.
Mel, we're out of time. Stay in touch, my friend.
I'll
I'll keep in touch.
All right, take care. That's Mel and the story of Mel's Hole, and that's the latest. When there's more, you'll hear about it right here. This is CBC. One of the greatest stories ever told was told on this program. How long ago was it? God, you know, I don't even remember now. About a hole in the ground that had no end, or no end that anybody could find. It was a damnedest story you ever heard in your whole life. Anybody remember Mel's Hole? Well, guess who I've got on the line, I think. Mel. Mel, is it you?
It is him.
Mel,
I
can't believe it, Mel.
Yes, indeed.
Listen, brother, I just spent an hour red-faced, embarrassed, because I thought the Blair Witch Project was real. And I really thought it was real, Mel. I really thought it was real. I mean, I've still got the hook in my mouth here. And so I guess the first question I ought to ask you is, how long ago, Mel, did we do the shows that we did?
Oh, gosh, this must have been about, I'm going to say, 97?
97. Well, it was one of the greatest stories, no doubt, ever told. In fact, it spurred all kinds of things. Television crews went up to Ellensburg, Washington.
I know it. I heard many things, and
so I must begin by asking you, before I go forward any further with you tonight at all, Mel, is Mel's Hole, the story of Mel's Hole, another Blair Witch Project?
I will not drop any bombshells on you in regards to this being the Blair Witch Project. This is not the Blair Witch Project.
Real as a heart.
My life. This is my property. I may end up telling you things that will maybe... I haven't seen the Blair Witch Project. I don't know anything about that, but I will say that I can tell you some pretty scary things.
I know you can. all right, so anyway, I just wanted to get that out of the way
right here
at the beginning before my face goes...
Oh, no, this is not... Not that.
All right. Well, back in 97, I forget. Did I get a fax from you?
I sent you a fax way back then.
Is that how it began?
And basically, I was just curious about this hole on my property. I knew with your big audience that somebody might be able to return some information to me. I tried to do a little research on the depth of various holes and so forth, and mines and all of those sort of things. And
all right.
And so I was basically picking your audience's brain is what I was doing at the time.
Well, we were picking yours. It's the damnedest story I ever heard. Let's, radio, you have time. Let's tell a lot of the audience, you know, would not have been around then and would not have ever heard this story. And I've never heard one like it in my life. So, if you would...
Sure. I'll recap...
especially after all these years, it'll be good to see if your story now fits your story then.
Okay, well, sure. Well, basically, this all started. I sent artifacts, and, I had this property. Well, we're going to get into that later on. But
you owned the property at the time, right?
Yeah, it was actually my wife's property. But,
okay, was it empty property ostensibly?
No, we had a some outbuildings on there, a couple of trailers. It was really unimproved land, but while I could, I was living there, and mm-hmm. It was really I left the property.
Okay, so you lived in a trailer on the property?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And then there was another trailer or two on the property at the time.
Yeah, there were several outbuildings out there, and I had basically was doing a lot of research in various Indian herbal medicine and so forth. I grew various.
Yeah, I remember
things
that.
There.
I remember that.
And that was my thing. That and actually I used to spend a lot of time going to Nevada, dealing with the various bands of Indians down there, because they're the herbs that they use are the ones that I've been researching, and we might talk a little bit about that too at some point.
Sure.
In time, because I think you might find that interesting as well.
All right. Now the location of this is near Ellensburg.
It's on the Monastash Ridge, which is a little bit south of Ellensburg, but it's the prominent mountains surrounding the Ellensburg area there. Ellensburg is a little town basically in the center of Washington State, right off of I-90.
Right.
And it's a nice little place.
But yeah, I hear you. How long had you been living there?
Oh, we'd been there for several years.
Several years.
I'd married this woman in Ellensburg, and we lived there for a while, and then we kind of got broken up.
Well, at the time that you faxed me, you simply said, I don't even remember the facts now, but you said there was a hole on your property.
Yeah.
Into which, I guess for years, people had been dumping stuff.
Oh, absolutely. And one of the things I didn't tell you about, one of the things that regularly was dumped in the hole, was a little Mexican fellow used to come around about once a week.
Yeah.
With like a big steak bed truck full of tires that he used to dump in there, and the guy used to pick them up at the various used tire places. And I guess, you know, it costs money to dispose of tires, right?
Oh, well, I guess. Well, it does, because they have these big yards where they have these tire fires by mistake. Ha-ha.
Well, I don't know. He'd pick them up from, you know, wherever had them, you know, if they were too bald to be used as retreads or whatever. This guy, little Mexican guy, would pick them up and bring them over, and he must have dumped, like, thousands and thousands of
tires.
Tires.
Now, let's describe the hole. Was the hole just a hole in the ground, or was it a well?
Well, if you looked at it, you know, if you were walking up to it, you'd say, "Huh, this is kind of an interesting looking well." What it was is about 9 feet across.
9 feet across.
And there was stonework around it, and I don't know when the stonework got put into it, but it was sort of.
It was round then.
Yes, it was. It was perfectly round.
And you're saying it was not 9 feet in diameter.
The diameter of it was 9 feet, and
wow.
What I did is I built a metal cover for the top, so. When it wasn't being used as a garbage disposal, for lack of a better term, it was covered up because I didn't want any problems. You know, people falling into it, kids falling into it, whatever. You know, I was.
You'd be charged with some crime or something.
I'm beginning to wonder now if they would have ever been heard from again if it had gone into it.
But, I don't think so. You just hear a scream disappearing.
Yeah, just kind of going on into infinity. I'd written to you, and I said, I've basically let like 80,000 feet worth of monofilament fishing line. You know, the
but there's even more before that. I mean, you said that people were throwing like dead cows.
The cows. I used to love, one of my favorite things to chuck in there was like television tubes. Man, I'd throw television tubes, the picture tube down there, and
it was big enough so you could drop it. In other words, the whole. I take it for as far as one could see or hear, went straight down. It must have.
If I would hold something over, like, towards the center of the hole, I couldn't go all the way to the center because, you know, going by 9 feet across, that's more than 4 feet, 4.5 feet across. But
sure.
If I held something out, like, the size of a picture tube, you know, 19-inch picture tube from an old TV set and dropped that in there, I would never hear it hit anything. It would just fall.
And fall, and fall, and fall.
And that's what made me curious, is that how come, you know, I mean, you know, I didn't hear a splash.
No crash.
No crashing, no, you know, I mean, I could hear something if I didn't get things like dead center there, you know, and if it spun and...
If it would hit the sides, yeah.
But then eventually that sound would give up too, so, you know.
By the way, going back, do you have any idea what this hole originally was? Was it anything? Was it something... that anybody dug, do you think? Was it something that was naturally always there, or what do you think it was?
As far as I can determine, and you know, everyone that I'd spoken with said that hole has always been associated with that property. One person that I talked to says, well, as far as we know, the hole there, you know, and your property's been there as long as the whalebone has been in the tree out there in Ellensburg. We've got a, Ellensburg is a strange place. We've got a tree out in Ellensburg.
Yes.
In someone's yard.
Yes.
And there's a whalebone jaw growing out of the tree.
What?
Yeah, the jaw of a whalebone, and it's like embedded in the tree.
Are you telling me the truth?
Yeah, you can go to. Yeah, in fact, I was familiar with it because I used to walk the neighborhoods there and see it. You could see the tree, but you could actually go to the Yakima Herald newspaper.
Yeah,
and you could see a picture of it.
How? Look, that's Central Washington.
Yes,
that's not the ocean.
Yes, no, the ocean is a good. Well, the Puget Sound's a good 90 miles away.
90 miles.
Yes.
So how could there be a whalebone growing out of a tree?
There you go. There you go. But the whalebone's been there like for 100 years. You know, and people tell me they, you know, the ones I've talked to, well, your hole's been there as long as, I mean, Ellensburg doesn't go back much further than, I'd say, 150 years.
150 years.
You know, so, I mean, that, you know, was a town, you know.
So that hole was probably there long before.
Way before that, and other people held the property, and, you know, I don't know at what point did, you know, the rockery get built around it, but it's kind of nice. You know, it looks nice.
So you're telling me, like, thousands of tires, refrigerators, dead cows.
Dead animals, dead dogs, you know, whatever.
It's like you didn't have to burn trash.
Oh no, and you know we're kind of ecologically sensible people there, so we don't really generate a lot of garbage or trash or anything. But yes, we did put our household trash in there if we didn't use it for compost or things like that. You know, if we got, you know, some
right.
Things. So we threw a lot of stuff in there.
So know? After years and years, you finally got, and I understand, incredibly curious about how deep this damn thing really was.
It was just one of those moments that, you know, all of a sudden you say, good grief, I got to get to the bottom of this, right? So to speak.
And, unintended,
and,
yeah.
And so I used to, when I lived in California, I used to do, a lot of shark fishing, and so I had some of those big old, you know, reel type fishing poles. And so, you know, the first thing I did was empty. It must have been about 1,200 yards of fishing line down there. Because this.
What did you do? Did you take a rod, or I mean, how did you load?
Well, yeah, the first adventure that I had with this, and this was kind of. Before the obsession began with finding out more about this, is that I basically sent down into the hole from, you know, just my big, you know, shark fishing pole.
Yeah.
A fishing weight, and next to the fishing weight, I also had a roll of lifesavers.
Lifesavers.
And the reason I had the lifesavers at the end is that if I hit water. This old shark fisherman's trick. If I hit water, the lifesavers would melt.
Well, sure.
Yeah. See, we used to do that when we go fishing.
Yeah, in other words, it would be so far down
that
anything else you would put down there, would obviously be dry by the time you got it back up again.
Yeah. So, you know, I just, you know, emptied the fishing pole, and then, you know, when it got to the end of the line, I just let it sit there for a while, and you know, it takes a little while for a roll of lifesavers to melt, but... That's how it would determine that it was wet down. You know, if it was wet down there, they hit water.
So, how much initial line did you have on that first?
It must. You know, I'm going. You know, through trying to remember what these, you know, big pen reels held, but there was like it must have been about 1,200 yards on there.
1,200 yards.
1,200 yards. So that would have been about 3,600 feet at least. That was the first expedition into the hole.
So you let it all the way out?
That's right.
Could you feel at any point like the weight? Of course, I suppose at some point when you've got that much line reeled out, you've got weight, period. But could you still sense the weight at the end of that line as you roll it?
Oh, yeah. You, at that distance, you can actually move the line. You could, you know, you can move it, you know, laterally, side to side. But
it was kind of an effort. You can actually, if you could actually get a swing to it, but it was really hard. I mean, you think about that. You know, you're trying to swing something that's 3,600 feet. You know, it's difficult. You know.
And as you let it down, you didn't feel any turns or twists or.
No twist, no obstruction. The basically, I let the line go down freely with the weight on. I had a 1 pound fishing weight at the end of this line, and basically it went down and down and down and down and down on. You know, it's at the same pace basically.
Huh.
That's at that point there when I got the line. You know, when I got all the line up there, I looked at my
lights. You must have been scratching your head saying, how many feet was that again?
About 30. That was 3,600.
3,600 feet.
Yeah.
I guess there are holes that go down 3,600 feet. I'm not an expert on holes, but.
A little bit more than half a mile, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I guess there are holes that maybe go that deep down.
That's right.
But that is where the story continues. So hold on, Mel. This is Mel of Mel's Hole, back in the U.S. from Australia. But then again, that's another story entirely. You're just beginning to hear this one. So, with a fishing reel, originally, down 3,600 feet, no bottom. But that is not the end of this story. I'm Art Bell. This is Coast to Coast AM.
So you think you're Romeo, playing a part in a picture show.
After the program we did with Mel, and the one we're doing now, I found out quickly that there was an abiding, gigantic fascination for this kind of thing. I mean, people, I guess, I don't know exactly what the fascination is. Frankly, I really don't know. All I know is I had thousands of emails and faxes from people wanting to know about this hole and telling me, in fact, about other holes. Mel's Hole is not the only deep mystery hole in the world, Mel. There are others, and people have told me about them, but yours is quite spectacular, to be sure. But there's some fascination, and you must have felt it when you got down 3,600 feet. You must have been saying to yourself, what the hell?
Well, yeah, at that point there, it became kind of a quest to find out how far this will go down. So I went, basically when it hit 3,600 feet and came up with dry lifesaver candies.
Right.
I said, well, I'm going to need more fishing line than this. And so basically I, let out the 3,600 feet, let another, 3,600 feet in from a similar reel. So down at that point to, 36 and 36, that's 7,200 feet.
So you're down over, you're like a mile and a half down.
Over a mile at that point there. And I was still going, you know, it was still going down. You know, at that point there, the line is still going down. I'm going down, I'm going down.
Now, a number of people said after that first show that after a while, the weight on the end of the line would be insignificant with reference to the weight of the line itself.
Yes, and in fact, I recall that, and I was curious about it myself. And the best I could do is, and I wasn't going to bring up all the line I had let down at the point that we talked about this.
Yeah,
last.
You'd be cranking.
I would want to get like some sort of motor driven winch at that point to deal with that. I didn't want
sure.
Or deal with that. But anyway, I looped it around one of those spring fisherman scales, you know, the kind that you put in your tackle box there, and you know, kind of try to get a weight on that thing there. And I think when I weighed it, it was like 17, 18 pounds.
17 or 18 pounds.
Yeah, I don't have this written down, so I don't remember exactly. But the combined weight of the weight that I had on there plus the weight of all the line that went into the hole, when I took the final reading of line, was about 17, 18 pounds of line down there. And that's a lot. When you think about monofilament fishing line, I mean, you know, that stuff, when you have, like, even if you have a spool of it, it's pretty insignificant stuff. But when you got that much out there, it's going to weigh a lot.
Oh, well, sure.
And
what was the final total of how much you got down there?
I got down exactly at the point that I'd given up putting line in there. And when I'd contacted you, I had 80,000 feet worth of line down in there.
80,000 feet?
80. And I don't know, that translates to, like, what, 15 miles worth of line?
Oh, my God.
80,000 feet. And
is there any way that you could be sure... Now, eventually, did you reel all that back in again?
No. Oh, no. No, I did not bring that line back up again there.
So you never saw the lifesavers from that far down?
No. There were lifesavers at the end of it for sure, because I just let the assembly go down there. But it was only, you know, it was just because it was already there. But I never brought it up. Not 80,000 feet worth, no.
And how far down again? I'm sorry, one more time.
80,000
feet. 80,000 feet.
Yeah. That's 80 with three other zeros, 80,000 feet.
God, you must have been going out to buy fishing line.
Oh, yeah. Well, I would buy it in if you ever go, I don't know if you're a fisherman, Art, but
I'm not. That's why I'm struggling a little
here. If you go to a professional fishing store where, you know, fishermen buy their stuff, they sell the line in they have the line there in huge bolts. You know, these things are like about a foot across, and they're big old things there, and they will fill each fisherman's reel from that.
I've got you.
You know, so
bought the whole bolt.
I would buy a bolt of line is what I did. I said, I'm going to need this much here, you know, and I figure I'll get a good deal on the line, buy the whole darn thing. You know, that was my way of doing that.
Were you telling anybody about this when you were doing this? I mean,
Well, I think a couple of people knew that. When I went to buy the fishing line, I didn't tell them, that I was going to, you know, use this to measure the hole on my property, you know, and, you know, they don't really care what you're going to do with the fishing line. I mean, you know, it's as far as they know.
Yeah, they don't care. That's
yeah, right. I mean, you know, you buy fishing line there, you know, they say, well, you know, you must have a lot of reels to fill, you know, so I think that was the thing there. So, no, I didn't have any problem with that. The only thing that really differed at that point in how I dealt with the line is that instead of, When I exhausted the two fishing poles worth of line, I hooked the line up to what is known in fishing as an outrigger, which is kind of like a short little fishing pole that you would have. It's like about a foot and a half long, and
right.
It went through that. And I could kind of swivel it over to the side if I needed to, but it didn't. You know, I was going. You know, it wasn't like going down to the middle of the hole. It was kind of, you know, about a foot and a half away from the side. And let it go down from there. So I would let the line go through the outrigger is basically what I did.
How could there be a hole? I mean, even if you had hit bottom at 80,000 feet, how could there be
a hole? Let's say it stopped running at 50,000 feet. You know, I would, you know, if the line stopped running at 50,000 feet, you know, and I got a reading there at 50,000 feet and it stopped.
Yeah.
I said, boy, that's a deep hole, 50,000 feet.
But 80,000 and no stop.
Yeah, it hadn't stopped at that point. Well, you know, I...
Had anything ever come out of that hole now?
The only thing that we kind of think came out of it is some guy who had a hunting dog that passed away. The dog died. He put the dog in the hole, threw the dog in the hole. And it was the belief of several people that the dog came back from the dead.
Out of the hole?
Well, they didn't see it from the hole. They saw the dog out, you know, around town and, you know, in the area and stuff. And
so then you're telling me the guy threw his
dead dog
in the hole.
Dead dog
in
the hole.
And then the same dog was seen later around.
That's right. That's right. In fact, there was one other...
Well, you know, I always wondered, Mel, you once told me when you die,
yes,
you wanted to be thrown in the hole.
That was in my will, and That's how I wanted my remains to be dealt with.
Or reverently dropped, I guess.
I was willing to take that journey. You know, I thought it would be a great journey. I believe when I wrote to you, I said that the hole was kind of my dogs wouldn't go anywhere near it and things like that. It kind of had a weird feeling.
Yeah, well, maybe they knew that another dog got tossed out.
Well, that could be. But there was a weird. Just an eerie sense about it, and you know, I thought about that because you know, after I talked to you, actually, I would get kind of a strange feeling too, and I'm going to kind of describe the feeling to you.
All right, please.
The sensation that you got there. Have you ever been surprised by the moon? It's like you go out, you look out the window, and the moon is up there, and it's like for a second you don't realize it's the moon.
Sure.
You get that eerie sense, and then
sure.
then your brain puts together that it is the moon.
Yeah, sure, that's happened to everybody.
You get, but that Dang. Feeling is like the you got that feeling a lot around the hole there.
Oh,
you felt that feeling. It was that kind of feeling that you would have. You get that sense that you were constantly surprised by the moon. During the day or during the night, it didn't matter if the moon was in, the moon was out, it didn't matter. That was the sensation, and I finally was able to nail it down. It occurred to me, and I said, that's the same feeling I used to get, you know, when I was at my property. It was that strange feeling.
Well, you said there was one other thing, too, that happened with that hole that was unusual, besides the story about the dog.
There's a lot of unusual things about it. If there's a specific unusual thing that you know about it,
the one
thing that it was said. Are we talking about the thing where people would see like the dark black shaft of light coming out of it?
No, no. But tell me about that.
Well, this was something again that was told to me, but it was the people said that from time to time, what they would see when they would look over towards the property, or if they were on my property and looking at that way, they would see like a shaft of the blackest black that they'd ever seen
coming out of the hole.
Coming out of the hole. And extending up into the sky.
Oh.
It was like just the...
That is weird.
Yeah. That is the... that is a totally...
Let me ask you this, Mel. It's a pretty wide hole, 9 feet. Could you take a real high-powered light?
Yes, I did. I did shine lights down there and really didn't get very far with the... the lights that I had.
You know, I would presume you would see the sides of the hole for a while.
I could see that to the side, and I could see where the rock work went down several feet, ran out, and then it was, the masonry work around there, where it was like dirt or rocky below that. But, I could see that, I could definitely see that far. But
I guess the light would just flat disappear.
Yeah, you just run out of light. And I'm not sure if I had one of those huge, 250,000 candle light power, I don't know how far it would have gone down.
Well, I've got a 6 million candle power light.
Yeah,
I mean, even that would just poop out.
I mean, you could, those kind of things are cool to like shoot into the sky.
I rather found them useful for pointing at photographers hanging around.
Those are I've had similar uses of.
Yeah, they take their video cameras and they split,
yeah,
man.
Yeah,
they need that little
light. Especially if they have the night vision on,
So then, you were so much of a believer in, I don't know, dare I say, the power of the whole.
Yeah.
That you wanted to be,
Yeah, when I died, my body was supposed to be put into the hole.
And I take it your real reason, if I were to ask you for that, is because of the dog story.
Absolutely, absolutely, and it was just such a strange thing. I have talked to people about what the hole
actually is. I mean, not the people that know what it is, but, you know,
and there are
speculated.
People, there are people who know what it is?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, I cannot go to, you know, the people that had my property and say, look, why don't you just fess up there and tell me what it is? They're not going to tell me.
So, all right. What happened was that you came on my program.
Yes.
Maybe your biggest mistake.
Yes. Yes, yes.
And told this whole story. And
innocently.
Innocently, that's right. Absolutely,
yes.
Innocently. And then it was like the next day or a couple of days or how long was it?
It was you know, I talked the day I sent you the fax. I sent you the fax, and then I sent the fax, and I believe you read the fax that evening. And then I went out to the property just to think, oh, good grief, I'm gonna have a bunch of people down there, you know.
Yep.
And so I went out there, and then I came back home. I wasn't living at the property there because our dwelling unit there got caved in from the snowstorm there. You know, some of these little tin shacks here don't hold up too well when you got 2 feet of snow on top. So we moved, you know. I had rented an apartment in Ellensburg. And so, you know, I went back to the apartment that night, and that's when I talked to you. I don't remember.
All right. And then it was a day or two or whatever. You went back to the property.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
After the show.
What happened is that it was like the following day. I went back to my property, and there were, I don't want to sound like I'm a lunatic here, but there was like armed people on my property. I couldn't get in. There was barricades there. There was already a whole bunch of a yellow gear. Your earth moving equipment was at my property.
Oh yes.
And I was basically told that there was an airplane accident there. An airplane crashed on the property, and that I couldn't go in there. And
you told them it was your property.
Oh yeah, yes. In fact, I think they knew it was my property. I mean, I let them know this is my property. So, well, you know, we're gonna have to, you know, we have to deal with the situation. Well, I didn't see any smoke. I didn't see any evidence of a plane crash or anything. But they were not gonna let me onto my property.
Yeah.
You know, so I decided, well, I'm gonna go back to town. At that point, there, you know, I said, okay, this stuff is going on. And I believe I had talked to you again at that point there, and we described.
You did. I remember you called me that night, and you said, "My God, there's armed people up there,
yeah.
And they won't let me in."
That's exactly it.
Okay.
And so again, all this time here, you know, what I have is a situation where my property was taken over, and why they were out there, how come they chose to go to my particular property that they knew was there.
There's only one answer.
Yeah.
And it's that you were on this program
right. But, it, you know, for someone to have that incredible level of mobilization, curiosity, wherewithal, and all these things here to deal with, you know, to deal with that. You know what I'm saying? It's like this is a big production.
Well,
they wanted this property.
Maybe a hole of this kind justifies that kind of big production. I mean, maybe there's something.
I can
imagine there's something really unusual, special, that
there has to have some properties that someone was highly interested in, that they thought was very valuable to have, and that they had to have. That makes sense, doesn't it?
They, to you, meaning the government. Were these government employees?
At the property, I had both civilian and military people that were there.
Yeah, that would figure.
But I got to tell you something. I mean, I was in the Army many, many years ago, and I know what a green, uniform looks like, and the fatigues and so forth. But I got to tell you something. When I'm thinking about it there, I couldn't tell you which Army they were.
Which Army?
Yeah. I mean, all I knew is they were in military uniforms, okay?
Armed.
I couldn't tell you if they were U.S. I couldn't tell you if they were German. I couldn't tell you what they were.
Mel, did they have sidearms? Did they have?
They all had weapons. Everyone there had weapons.
As well as like semi-automatic weapons or automatic
weapons?
Exactly.
From what I could tell, they also had fully automatic weapons.
Fully automatic weapons.
Yes.
Well, that's really intimidating. I've been in countries where I've encountered people with fully automatic weapons who frowned at me, and I didn't like it.
You went to Israel. You got used to seeing people
everywhere you go.
Everywhere
there's guns
you go.
In Israel. That's right.
You bet.
Mel, hold on. We'll
be
right
back. Here.
This is Coast to Coast AM. Once again, Mel from Mel's Hole fame, and Mel, somebody just sent me a really interesting fax.
Okay.
Somebody named Scarlett. It says, how far is Mel's Hole from the place where Dr. Reed has had his encounter with the alien?
I wonder,
you know, and that never hit me until I just got this fax. They are similar areas, I think.
Indeed. Not far from where my property was. Well, I mean, relatively speaking, is where they found Kennewick Man.
Kennewick Man, yes, right.
Mm-hmm. Along the
so that is that's a very unusual area up there.
Yeah, I was talking with my nephew about how peculiar Ellensburg is. I mean, it's a little town, about 12,000 people, half of them college students, actually more than half of them college students, you know, so you basically got about 6,000 locals there. Pretty small place.
All right, let me stop you, and when you and I last spoke,
yes.
Your encounter with those strange folks up there, you had another encounter with them, and they made you an offer you couldn't refuse.
Yeah. Well, first they intimidated the hell out of me because basically they said, look, you know, one of the civilian fellows there said, hey, we could find a drug lab out here and we could put you out of business in a hurry. You know what I'm talking
about?
Oh,
that's right. I remember, yes.
For all intents and purposes, it sure as heck could have looked like I had a drug lab out there. I had a lot of strange non-native plants growing there. None of them, I have to say, of narcotic nature. These are just your typical desert, high desert type plants. They basically said, hey, we could shut you down and, you know, we don't have to worry about all of this. Ultimately, they did make me an offer that I could not refuse, and I will tell you the offer that they made me. And it had to do with going to Australia, and I needed money to go to Australia, and I wanted to continue my research in medicinal plants, and so we put together a very interesting package and a very interesting lease on the land to this party.
Well, as a matter of fact, did you tell me you were going to Australia? Yes, you did.
Yes.
Yeah, you told me that they had made you an offer for the land, essentially,
yes.
Which was going to be, if I recall correctly, leasing it
in perpetuity.
In perpetuity. In other words, forever, or for your life anyway.
That's exactly.
And so then you were off to Australia with a parcel of money.
They basically gave me $250,000 a month for the property.
$250,000 a month? My God. And so you were, and I know you were in Australia because you sent me a number of emails, which I did mention to my audience from Australia. I mean, there was no question where it was from. It was from Australia.
No, I was set up in Australia. I had I actually for a good while lived out there in Perth, which I loved living in Perth.
In Perth.
Oh, it's wonderful out there. I loved Australia. Oh.
Well, I thought here's Mel gone to Australia. I had no idea you were getting that much money. Obviously set for life.
Oh, I'll tell you, it was great. I built some facilities out there in the near off the outback, basically, where I can grow the various plants that I was allowed to bring with me and cultivate them over there. And we also did a fair amount of wombat rescue out there, which was very gratifying. And
wombat rescue.
Yeah, they're native marsupials out there, kind of good-sized critter out there, but a lot of them were becoming endangered. And I can tell you this right now, the wombats now, and I do believe to some degree with the work that I'd done out there, they're making a comeback out there.
Well, that's wonderful that you've done all
back.
That.
But Mel, what the hell happened? In other words, here you were in Australia with all this money, and now you're back here and you've fallen on hard times.
Well, you know, I'll tell you. I accepted their offer as I could. I was basically, you know, I was to leave town. I left town. I was actually told to leave my car and wait at the rest stop, one of those, you know, where you get off the road outside of Ellensburg, and I was taken to the airport and then taken to San Francisco and then taken to Australia. And so I'd left the country. I had my two dogs with me. And we,
they wanted to be damn sure you were going to Australia.
I took my dogs. I was set up there. I already had there was an account already set up for me. The complex paperwork that was involved in moving as a resident to Australia was all taken care of for me. I mean, it was a piece of cake. They'd made the arrangements, and so there was some cooperation on the Australian government's part.
Holy smokes! I know they can do this kind of thing, but I mean, it tells you how important this hole must be.
They were basically willing to give me $3 million a year for the use of the property, and non-disclosure on certain aspects. And I can only disclose as much as I can disclose, and there's a lot of things I don't know.
Well, listen, I can sympathize with that. Take the money and run. Hell yes.
Yeah. Hey, you know, to me it was fine. I got
on the one hand, you got the guys with the automatic weapons, and on the other hand, you got the guys with the money and the ticket.
Yeah. So
not a hard choice.
No. I 99 of 100 people in the same situation would take it. You know, I do.
And
agree.
I don't blame you for one second. And so you went to Australia.
Well, it was wonderful. I loved it. I did a lot of good work out there.
Yeah,
but
what happened? What happened, Mel? I mean,
a number of things happened there, and I'll tell you, one of the things was I did continue my work with the herbs. Had some incredible successes out there with some of the things that I'd actually. I'm going to go out on a limb on this, but some of the things that I had imported from my property out there to Australia.
They usually don't like that stuff.
Pardon?
They usually don't like that stuff.
No, but we had found some of the plants that I had grown out there had some very remarkable properties, and
you think that would have anything to do with the area where they were originally?
Absolutely, that
near the hole.
That's absolutely, because I've had other plants there that were not native to the whole property that did not have similar results. So I know that growing in proximity of the hole, and then we did a lot of cultivation there. I grew a lot of that. One of the reasons for being where I was in central Washington was the type of climate that was there. It was very conducive to growing the various things I did. And,
right.
I try to find similar conditions out there in Australia as well.
Yeah, but when I say, Mel, what happened? I mean, how did you go from being relatively rich and well off in Australia? Now you're back here, not well off.
I'm back here, and as you recall, I was to make an appearance on the show, I believe.
Yeah, that's right. You sent me.
I told you I was going to be in town. We got in touch, and I actually talked to you here from the States.
I promoted it. I said Mel's got a hold of me. He's in the States. He's going to come on the show, and then of course you were a no show.
Well, I'm going to relate to you the chain of events that occurred.
Please.
From the day that I was supposed to appear on the show,
right,
as much as I can remember, and bring it up to date till now.
All right.
Okay, on the day that I was going to be on the show, I helped my nephew move from his apartment.
Right.
We got him a place down in the Olympia area.
Right.
And so, you know, we moved him down there and all of that, and we got him down here, and then I was going to we had to return the truck back to the Tacoma area. So we got him all settled here. I got up to Tacoma, returned the truck, and I was going to take the bus down to Olympia, just take the transit. There's a bus that runs from Tacoma to Olympia. So I got on the bus and ran down there. And I got on the bus, and there was an altercation on the bus. There was fighting. There was commotion going on. Anyway, we pulled into the, and some of you listeners might actually remember this, but we if they were on the bus, or they might have heard of it. But we pulled into the 512 park and ride, and some apparent transit people got on the bus, and they wanted to ask questions about what happened on the bus.
Yeah.
And I got off the bus, and I said I'd talk to these guys here, but I have to get them back. I have to get back to Olympia here because they're going to do all of this here. And so they said that's no problem. We're going to, we've got the transit bus here. We'll just take you back to Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
And I says okay, and that's the last thing I remember.
The last thing you remember
about.
What do you mean?
Was it about 12 days later? I found myself in San Francisco.
Somebody hit you? Did what did you? Give
I
you
have
a
no idea. At that point, I found myself in San Francisco, in a pretty rough part of town, in an alley. These bums were basically trying to wake me up.
Holy mackerel!
They were trying to get me to sing. I remember this. They were trying to get me to sing On the Road Again because I sort of looked like Willie Nelson. And
are you sure?
This is exactly what happened.
And you lost how many days?
12 days.
From an altercation on a bus.
That's I was told that they wanted to talk to me about it, and they were willing to take me back to Olympia from there. So, you know, I got onto the little transit van. That's the last thing I remember.
So 12 days gone when you, God knows what, were knocked out or kept in some kind of coma or...
When I woke up there, you know, I had nothing on me. I had no identification. I had no wallet. I had no keys. I had the clothes I had when I was, you know, moving. They were still as grubby and filthy as, you know, after you move, you get all grubby and filthy.
Yeah.
I was in my clothes. I oriented myself down there. I looked around. I noticed there was pain in my arm. I rolled up my sleeve. It looked like, looking at my elbow now here, it looked like, what would you say, an IV was taped to my skin?
Yeah.
There was still the residue of tape
on
my
man.
Arms.
Yeah, I understand. So, obviously,
and,
somebody kept you out for 12 days for some reason.
And I listened to the first part of your show, and, you know, you're talking about teeth.
Yeah.
All of my back teeth have been removed.
What?
I have no back teeth.
You have no back teeth?
None.
You don't mean like...
No molars, no wisdom teeth.
You're not talking about wisdom teeth. You're talking about...
None. No back teeth. Not on top, not on bottom.
Why would they take your teeth out?
I have no idea, Art. The next thing I had, I got in touch with my nephew. I said, look, I'm down here. He gets me a Greyhound ticket to pick up at the bus station over there. I get on the bus. And
you were broke?
I had nothing.
Nothing?
I had nothing. You know, I mean, that was it. I had no, you know, he gets me on the bus. I take the bus back. You know, and, you know, he told me he was just absolutely frantic, you know, because I'd called him collect from down there. And
I was
just,
frantic, too. I couldn't figure out what happened to you.
So what happened is there I am, you know, looked like something had occurred to me there. I had had no teeth there. I have no idea why I have no teeth in the back. I have front teeth.
Well, were there scars where your teeth had been, in other words, if there had been recent surgery or...
Oh, yeah. I mean, in fact, at the time there, I was still bleeding from the back of the mouth. I mean, I could still taste blood in the back of my mouth there, so it was pretty ugly.
Boy, you were screwing with somebody you shouldn't have been screwing with.
Well, you know, I would think that the easy answer would be is that it had something to do with I'm going to get on the air and, you know, blah 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 and say this and that.
In other words, since I had promoted the show.
Yeah, but that's really not it.
If that is it, then you could be in danger now.
Well, I don't believe that was it, because, you know, there's a lot of things that I was doing. I kind of got myself in trouble.
Yeah, but Mel, if you think about the fact that, look what happened after the first time you came on my show.
Yeah.
Then look what happened after I promoed years later that you were going to be on my show again.
Yeah.
And you're gone for 12 days.
Mm-hmm.
You have to imagine there's a possibility of a relationship there.
We could take the connection and we could put it on the back burner. But, I'm a curious fellow. I mean, any guy that runs 80,000 feet of line into a hole.
He's a curious guy, yeah.
He's a curious guy. I got back to my nephews, and I'm still with my nephew now.
Don't even say where.
No, but I found out that, and I don't know if you can appreciate this or that, but the next thing that happened to me is that I found that there was some legal action taken against me.
Legal action?
And the legal action was taken on behalf of my former wife.
Your former wife?
Yeah. Basically, I had the property on the Manassas Stash.
You said it was her property.
It was her property, and it was basically she had leased it to me in perpetuity as part of our divorce settlement. I had helped her go through school.
All right, Mel.
Yeah.
Hold on. We're at the bottom of the hour. Oh, it just gets worse and worse. And a kid without a cent. Hope she didn't do that to him. Oh, man. We'll be right back. America, America, America,
America, America, America. I was without my belt buckle, and that really, you know.
They took your belt buckle?
Yeah, I had made.
Now, that's really low.
I had made a
person's teeth, but you take your belt buckle.
It was just, you know, I had everything else, and I there was another belt buckle on there. It was dope, but I'd made a belt buckle out of a silver fork, eating fork.
Yeah.
And bent it. I used to bend metal and do all kinds of things with it, and fashioned a nice belt buckle out of that, and
that was gone.
And I used to tumble stones and stuff, too, and I just had nice looking rock that I had on there, too, that, it, you know, I picked up and put on there, and it was like, you know, I had my pants, I had my shoes, I had my socks, and, you know, why take my belt buckle? But that's, might be getting ahead of myself here. But anyway, I get back and find out that there was some legal action taken against me here, and it was initiated by my former wife.
I see.
Basically, I had the property through part of the divorce settlement there, and, you know, I helped her with the school, and it was pretty worthless land, and she said, well, you know, I'll give you that as part of the settlement there, and, you know, I mean, I wasn't.
So
really...
then what was the legal action? She wanted the whole back?
Well, what happened was that the papers I was served with said that I was in violation of the terms of the lease with her.
With her?
Exactly. You know, as part of the divorce settlement, and the number of things that occurred at my property, one, that there were underground fuel tanks put in. Number two, there was a septic system put in.
This is what the people who came up there put in.
Number three, there was some paving of roads, and these were all things that were not supposed to occur on the property.
Gotcha.
And so basically, I had lost all rights to the property out there, period. The sad thing about it was I was giving my former wife, because we kind of had an agreement there that if I were to profit from the property, I would, you know, take care of her. We had, you know, we didn't have enough there to keep a marriage going, but, you know, certainly didn't have anything against her. I was giving her $25,000 a month.
Oh, it's pretty generous.
Yeah, I would say.
That would keep her, well, she must have smelled the color of the money.
Basically, I figured
she must have known if you were giving her $25,000, there was a lot more.
Well, someone
in that hole.
But I mean, there's no way that she would have had access to the property, as far as I can tell, and someone had to get to her.
Well, yeah, but if she's got control of the property now, then she's probably made a deal.
She's dealing with them, yes.
With them.
Mm-hmm.
And you're out in the cold, and you get left with the bums in San Francisco and no back teeth.
I'm down there in a really ugly part of town. I got to tell you, there I don't have any back teeth. I don't even have my belt buckle. And, you know, right now I'm at the point there where I'm actually, you know, I don't know, you could probably tell I'm a smoker, but I'm actually having to sell plasma in order to buy cigarettes. That's how bad I am right now.
Oh, my God. Talk about a riches to rags story.
I mean, we're talking, you know, all the way around there.
Well, and still you're pursuing this, Mel. I don't want to name these people. You know, you've got some names here.
Yeah.
And I don't want to name them on the air because I just want to be careful here. But you want to find, for example, the Mexican fellow who used to throw
the tire guy.
Why do you want him? A Catholic priest you're looking for.
That's right. There's a priest. There's a Hungarian fellow that I need to get in touch with.
People who have something to do with the hole. My question is, after all of this, Mel, what do you think you can do?
Well, you know, maybe I should run this back to my time in Australia. Okay.
All right.
And you know, I did bring some of the various plants that we'd grown in. On the property by the hole there, and it's just various plants. If anyone wants to, they could probably do a little research and find out exactly which plants they are, because the plants themselves have been written about for the last 100 years, and they had remarkable properties.
Like what?
Pardon?
Like what?
Well, I'm not going to say the names of the plants there.
No. Properties, remarkable.
Oh, they were used, for instance, during. By a certain army doctor for dealing with the great influenza that we had at the turn of the century, the one that killed all those people.
Yes, millions.
Yes, and the people that received this it was a Indian concoction. Were just fine, and no problems whatsoever.
But I mean, you have been, pardon the pun, kicked in the teeth over this now.
Yes.
And so why do you want to keep pursuing it? I mean, if you keep going after this...
It doesn't matter at this point in a lot of ways. I'm 68 years old.
Yes, sir.
Or I will be 68 in June. I don't, you know, I mean, I had a simple life before this. I had, you know, I had an extraordinary run for the last several years. And I still need to get some answers for things. I need to get hold of the guy that I gave the gun to. I believe he contacted your show.
Where did you get that gun?
That I dug up on the property. I planted various things out there, and from time to time, you know, when I'm clearing a piece of land to plant on, you know, I'll dig up rocks and I'll dig up metal and all kinds of things there. And I found this
gun
and a holster and those little odds and ends along with it there. And I just basically took this and threw it in my drawer in my little workshop there, my office that I had on property there. And then when I had to move, I gave it to this fellow, and because I needed to move into the apartment, I gave it to him as a deposit on the apartment.
You know, so it must have been a decent gun.
It was from what I could tell, and I'm not a big gun man, but it was a German P-38. It looked like one of those, you know, like the Nazis used to use back in World War II.
Yeah, you might have really had something on your hands there, and you gave it to the guy.
Yeah, well, again, I'm not a gun person. I figure it might be worth something. I don't know. It didn't make any.
Why
difference.
Do you think getting hold of him now would be meaningful?
Well, for one, is we can't get hold of him, and two, for some of the things that I remember about the gun now, and that I also found out, and also what he had indicated to you about the gun as well. And what I had found out, and I talked with his son is basically says that this fellow is, he left the family, he left his wife, he left, you know, everyone there. He can't be found at all, and so I'd like him to contact me.
So he's disappeared, too.
And he had the gun that I gave him there, and it was found on the property.
And suppose you found the Mexican guy who threw down all the tires, thousands of tires. What would you do with him?
Well, part of this is also connected with the gun, so I'm going to tell you a little bit more about this here and what I found out about it, and I might be able to verify it with some of my own experience.
Fire away.
I talked with this guy's son, and this guy said that, you know, his father kind of became obsessed with this gun here, and I believe what he'd indicated to you is that he would shoot this gun and it wouldn't make a sound.
Yeah, I remember that. That was like, a long time ago now.
Yes. Well, I knew exactly who it was. I'm here to tell you, the guy is, you know, speaking the gospel there when he contacted you. But this thing was like dead silent and was really weird. Well, I talked to this guy's son because he's kind of close with my nephew, and we got talking. He says, you know what was interesting about this, I don't know what my dad told me, and, you know, when, you know, we were talking about it, and he kind of demonstrated for him, is that he would set the gun down, like, near the radio, and it would pick up signals from all over the place, like from the past, from the present, from any type of radio signals, and you could change the channels on the radio.
This is really weird, Mel.
Look, this
everything that comes
you
out of the area of that hole is weird.
Well, this is what I'm telling you here, is that he would do that if he would just like about a foot away from the, wave his hand near the gun.
Yeah.
The channels would change there, and he would get something like a baseball game from 1963, or it would be a weather report from Iowa, or it would be something from Canada, or it would be Mexican music playing. But if he was very still, it would stay exactly on a certain channel there, and he would get something like Out of Time with it.
That's weird.
Okay?
That's really weird.
And so that
So now I see why you want to find the gun.
Well, I'd like to find him. I'd like to find out that he's okay and that, you know, he hasn't done anything really peculiar or very strange.
Maybe it's true that everybody who in any way encountered the hole in the area came to problems.
Well, the guy with the tires, I want to get in touch with him because I had given his... It must have been a son or it must have been a grandson of his. He once drove the truck out there, and he had some problems on the property, and his son drove out there after him to help him with the truck and, you know, get him going there. And he had trouble there, too. To make a long story short, I gave him a couple of buckets of, 5-gallon paint buckets full of, like, rocks and metal and stuff that I'd picked up on the property.
Yeah.
That I was, instead of chucking them aside, I would just toss them in these buckets and occasionally I'd sort through them and see what's going on. But I gave it to him.
Right.
To put in the back of his car so he can get out of there because he wasn't getting any traction. So, you know, normally, you know, out there when you're in that part of the country, you always carry a couple of bags of sand or something in the back of your vehicle for traction.
Sure.
So he has a couple of buckets of rocks and possibly dirt and stuff that I want to get on my hand.
So you think then that anything that came from that area has unusual properties?
I'm beginning to believe that. I'm beginning to believe that. And if we reel this story up to Australia, is that I was approached when I was in Australia because I was dealing with some people in the various ministries there, the government things, the ministries of health and different things there, and they were kind of interested in what I was doing. And I was approached at one point to take some of the things that I had brought from the U.S., and we gave them to some people up there, three men, who had, like, advanced HIV.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys were in hospice.
Yeah.
Well, they're not in the hospice anymore. They're not on death's door anymore. These guys are doing just fine.
Wow.
This was stuff
this
that
is
we
some
grown.
Story. And, Mel, why did you... I don't understand why you left Australia. I mean,
I just came back here to... be with my family, and what family I have here. And
obviously, a big mistake.
Back in the U.S. here, that was my primary reason for coming up here.
But if you had stayed there, you might still be sipping pina coladas and stuff.
Well, you know, I do wish I was there. I got to tell you on the beaches in Australia, the women there were barely more than two Band-Aids and a postage stamp.
I've heard that, Mel.
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
more ways than one out there.
So the money's gone, the postage stamp girls are gone, the teeth are gone,
yes.
The belt buckle's gone.
Belt buckle's gone.
Gun's gone.
I'm trying to get hold of a few people. The Hungarian man, he lived in the area, and actually I have a lot of interest in getting to him. The priest fellow, same thing. He's kind of connected to the Hungarian fellow.
Mel, you know, I'm going to make a suggestion to you.
Yeah.
Maybe you should do what a lot of people do, and you should write a book about this. Have you considered it?
I don't know. I mean, that's, my nephew, was, you know, writing something based on me, you know, just, he just thought it was great. You know, he says, "Oh, I know this celebrity kind of guy here."
Now, people wrote songs about what happened to you.
Oh, I know. My nephew just showed me the other day. He had a compact disc called "The Ballad of Mel's Hole."
That's right.
Incredible. People told me they had drinks named after all of this, and
Mel's Hole drinks?
Yeah, you know, in the various bars in town in Ellensburg, and I mean, it was quite a remarkable phenomenon out there.
Huh.
It was really amazing. It really created quite a stir out in that part of the country.
Well, you know, have you tried? This is a key question. Have you tried to go back to the hole, or the property where the hole is?
No. I can't say I blame you, really. Right now, I'm keeping some of my cards close to the vest because I'd like to put some of the screws on my former wife there to see that, hey, you know, let her know, and I hope she's listening, hey, you know what happened to me?
Can it happen to you?
Can happen to you, and it might be worth your while to keep me a little bit quiet about things, you know.
Say 25 grand?
Now, I'm happy for an acre or two of land and a trailer I can call my own, you know, where I can keep doing my work.
Well, this is some odyssey. This is something you've been through, Mel.
Mm-hmm.
All over us. Well, I was going to say stinging hole. It's not a stinging hole. It's a unusual hole.
Yeah, basically it's a hole, but I really did get the shaft in the end here.
It's not funny. Sorry.
It has been a remarkable thing. I don't know. Did you read the facts that I sent you?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, did you read it to the audience? Or?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Because there were names in it. I didn't want to, you know.
Is there anything in there you wouldn't want me to talk about on the air?
Only the names.
No specific names?
No specific names.
Specific incidents?
Well, we've covered a lot of that.
Okay. Can I say this? There is a very, very, very strong connection with the Heaven's Gate incident and my property?
Well, okay, I will say this. You wanted to make contact with anyone who saw Marshall Applewhite
mm-hmm.
up in that Ellensburg area
yes.
prior to the last appearance on Coast to Coast. And by the way, Mel, for your original appearance here was, damn, I had it here.
In February of 97.
I think it was February 21st of
mm-hmm.
1997.
Mm-hmm.
I got a call from my board op during the break here. And he said February 1st, 1997.
Absolutely.
And so you think somehow, there's some connection to the whole Heaven's Gate thing?
I do believe, and that happened, that occurred, as you recall, about a month after my appearance.
I recall, yeah, well, I recall. All right.
On the show, and I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings.
Well, there's no way for people to get hold of you, is there? Nothing that you can give out?
I will give out an email address if anybody wants to get in touch with
really?
Me. Yes.
Okay, buddy, go for it.
Okay, Mel Waters.
Mel Waters.
One word, run it together, @home.com.
Mel Waters
Hole?
Home. H-O-M-E.
At home.
No, I don't have a domain name for...
So that's M-E-L-W-A-T-E-R-S at that's home, H-O-M-E, dot com.
Dot com.
Well, you're going to get a lot of email, Mel,
I really want to know if that priest will contact me. I want anyone that knows...
Any of the people from back then that had to do with you and the whole.
That's right. The Hungarian man, I'm very, very, very anxious to get hold of, and I do believe he would get in touch with me.
Mel, I'm so sorry all this has happened to you. We're running out of time here, but I'm you will never know how sorry I am that all this has happened to you. And
I'm gonna move along here. You know, it's
will prevail.
And who knows? You may not have heard the last of all of this.
Oh, listen.
And if my wife is listening, ex-wife is listening, hey, you owe me.
All right, that's Mel Waters at home, H-O-M-E.com. You're probably here from the media, too. Listen, buddy, hold on.
Put it on your website there. I want those people to get hold of me.
Hold on to your front teeth, Mel.
Thank you.
Later, buddy.
Bye.